Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Okay, there we go. All right, we should be recording.
Yeah. All right, so what meeting did you just have?
Do you want any wine?
No, I'm off the sauce.
For how long?
It might be a fucking permanent thing.
Seriously?
Maybe.
What happened?
I'm just not getting anything done, man. I turned 40 this year.
You turned 40?
I will in
when?
July.
I just turned 40. Yes, we are recording. 23 seconds. Perfect. I turned 40 in November.
Yeah.
You turned 40? God, I thought you were so much fucking younger than me.
No, we're the same age, man. Well, I mean, I'm whatever, 8 months younger than you or something.
I'm dying to tell you the rumor of who I have in you as being in my head.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know how, like, when you're... By the way, I'm sitting with Brendan Walsh. I'm fucking so bad at this podcasting shit.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I listen to a few of them. I listen to, like, you know, I don't know, how far do you get into those? Like, 8 minutes tops? Is that...
I'm fucking so... First of all, like, I just found this new system, Levelator, that gets my levels.
Because
before, I brought Tripoli in here, and I don't know how many cups of coffee he had, but he was like, "Duh, you fucking god!" Like, he's on stage at the comedy store.
Yeah. Oh, this balances it out?
Yeah. It takes all your levels and puts it all even, so everyone sounds the same.
Oh, that's good. I don't know anything about this technical shit. I don't.
Really?
On my podcast, Randy takes care of it all, so.
Really?
Yeah. We have a pretty nice setup, actually. He could, you know, it's not that expensive to get, like, you know, like those arms with them. You know how they have at the ice house.
But then it gives, like,
at it all day, like you're.
Yeah, then I got a fucking podcasting thing in my man cave, and everyone's like, don't get me wrong, when they asked, like, themes of the man cave, like, when they first came out to do the design, they were like, what do you want? And I actually thought, what if I had the ultimate. I didn't even have a podcast yet. Mm-hmm. I hadn't even done a podcast yet.
Yeah.
I hadn't even been on, like, Rogan's yet.
Yeah.
And I was like, what if I had the ultimate podcasting studio?
Yeah.
Now, in retrospect, I wish I'd fucking done that because podcasting
is taking off. No, this is dope. But yeah, if this is the place where you're going to come and chill and stuff too, you don't want to feel like you're sitting in a fucking morning radio.
Yeah, it's DJ fine. Just I mean, it's kind of subtle in the back. You don't really, like, see it. So, wait. What were we talking about right before that?
Well, you were talking about how awful your podcast is.
Oh, yeah. How bad
it
is.
Sam Tripoli yelling at the
Tripoli
mic.
Yelling at the levels. No, I've been dying to fucking talk. Oh, you're 40. So funny.
Well, almost.
So
I don't know. Should we be advertising that? I live in Hollywood.
Yeah, who gives a shit? I'm 40. 40's a fucking... You know what I had? I had a meeting.
I'm 39.
I had a meeting with my new agency. I left my old agency. I went to my new agency, and they said the greatest thing I've ever fucking heard. They're like, you just turned 40. You're, like, coming up on your real voice as a comedian.
Yeah.
Like, you're really hitting your money. You're coming up to that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, think about it. Bill Burr, Louis, fucking Seinfeld, all the greats didn't hit their stride until mid-40s.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be a fucking – I do never want to be –
Well, Seinfeld was a little – his show was on when he was in his 30s.
Yeah, but it was the 80s, so that was when 40 was really 35.
All right.
So like, I feel like we're definitely coming into our stride. Now, here's what this has been the thing I've been dying to talk to you about. For how long? So, like, how long have I known you? Maybe.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. Just a couple years or a few years?
I have known of you for about 10 years.
Yeah, same here. I mean, we've circled the same kind of...
But you had, like, a legend about you.
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, a lore that came before you even got to L.A. when you were in Austin.
Uh-huh.
That, like, in the MySpace days, because you were in, like, Doug Stanhope's top 10 or top 8.
Okay.
And then, you know how... I don't know. Did you?
The top. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Then I'm going to really wrap myself out for being the total fucking cunt that I am. Because there was, and it's not there now, only because I've fucking made big strides to not accentuate this part of my personality. Uh-huh. And I'm sure that this rides in every fucking, but, like, there was definitely a keeping up with the Joneses of where a comic was versus how many friends he had on MySpace versus who he knew, who he worked with, what circles, what cliques. Mm-hmm. Like, there were solid cliques. And Stanhope, in the MySpace days especially, was this clique of, like, fucking great comics. Mm-hmm.
And a few psychos.
I fucking worked with one weekend. I don't know what his name was, but he was one of the guys that was Stanhope's buddy. And I remember him telling me, like, I forget, I was talking about my act and what, and he was like, I snorted cocaine on stage live.
Yeah.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
I mean, I don't want to start throwing names around.
He's like, I got like a 12-year-old. I got a fucking...
I know who you're talking about.
I worked with him one weekend. He was a fun guy to party
Andy,
with.
Right?
Yeah, Andy Andrist?
Yeah, yeah.
He was a fun guy to party with. Yeah, I had a great time.
Yeah.
But it's so funny because when there's a comic that like that people know of, but mm-hmm. they don't know, they almost become exponentially better.
They're
fucking insane. Sean Rouse was another one.
Yeah.
Sean Rouse got this reputation of biting
motherfuckers. He lives up to that.
He does. Yeah. He does. But you do too. But mm-hmm. Sean Rouse came with this fucking legend of like, he was like this crippled Lenny Bruce who just bit motherfuckers on the neck nonstop. And you couldn't get too close to him because he was fucking, he had a wild smile and there was the picture of him getting hot, put into an ambulance.
That's right. What happened? I think he fell. Is that when he fell on the stairs? Either way, he's such a liability. Well, I don't know.
Whatever happened to fucking Sean Rouse? He's fucking amazing.
I saw him last night. Or not last night. Thursday or Friday, I did a set and he was there.
Really? Is he still doing stand-up?
Yeah.
He took some time off, right?
He's got a lot of fucking physical problems. Like he just got his knees replaced. So
God
that's
that is a fucking that's
good though. I went to me and Henry Phillips drove to Doug's to Stanhope's for
Super Bowl.
Maybe it was the Super Bowl. Yeah, it was probably the Super Bowl last year or the year before. And Rouse, like, I mean, for him to get from this chair to that door, which is, you know what, 12 feet away, if that, no exaggeration, it would probably take him to get out the door and off your patio about almost 10 minutes.
Really?
I mean, it was like he couldn't walk. Like his
God
knees
damn it.
Were
that
fucking...
That is almost a fucking sin. That's almost a crime that could happen to a dude.
Yeah.
But what was amazing is that he
such a
he
nice
is.
Guy, blackout drunk, biting people on the face in bars. I mean...
Yeah, I mean,
why God?
Maybe God was like, let's slow him down for a little bit.
We'll give him a brilliant comedic mind, but we're going to Hawkings the fuck out of his body.
Brilliant comedic mind. He was, man, I remember him getting the lineup on a Hollywood Improv the first time I ever got to meet the guy. And his name was like me, him, Daniel Tosh, and Zach Galifianakis were the lineup. I mean, what a fucking monster lineup. I brought my wife.
Yeah.
I was like, you got to see. She had never seen Zach. She didn't find Zach funny at all. She literally did not even giggle at Zach's material.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing she laughed at his last joke of the set was, well, you know, it's time to do laundry when you get out of the shower and dry off with a shoe. She laughed and she was like, okay. And then Tosh went up and just made fun of me. Mm-hmm. Like, didn't even do a set. She's going, I'm Bert. No one laughed, but he thought it was funny.
Yeah.
And then he did some material, but didn't. And then Sean Rouse went up and I was so blown away by his meticulousness.
Yeah.
Of like, of sincere stage presence.
Oh, yeah. He's at the show that we did on Friday. It was like, you know, it wasn't at a club. It was at that Hollywood Hotel, the old Ramada show that they used to do on Vermont.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever did that.
No.
It's like, it's a fine show. It's a nice venue. But it's, you know, there's people drinking and talking and stuff. But when Sean goes up, it's like he's so – doesn't feed into the energy of the room. It's like he'll, well – I'm looking at a TV. Like, such a, like, doesn't change. You know, he's not going to raise his voice to fucking get people's attention. It's just like this slow, methodical. He's like a Dexter of comedy, like, where it's just, he just gets in there and then eviscerates the fucking crowd.
That is the, he really is someone I hope that whatever.
Such,
you know,
a brilliant dark
he's
mind.
So fucking good. Fucking him. And then he had this legend because Attell liked him too. And then you came out to LA. You guys were all in Austin or in Texas. I remember Bob Biggerstaff was all friends with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Biggerstaff used to speak legends about how great you guys were. And I was like, so like I'm talking about, I'm headlining. I'm fucking just had kids and I'm fucking broke as shit living in Hollywood, and I see are these posting pictures of you guys partying your dick off, and I remember being so jealous, being like, fuck, And like the dude I was touring with was sober at the time, and like when I was featuring, and it was just like I was like fuck. And then I went and I saw you. The first time I ever saw you do stand up was at the Laugh Factory.
Okay,
you just moved out to LA, I want to say,
maybe, or it might have been right. But yeah, I was coming out for stuff for the year or two leading up to me moving out,
and I came in. And I it was a dead crowd. I think I was doing a set there too.
Mm-hmm.
And you did your Gene Hackman joke.
Uh-huh.
And I bit hard as fuck.
Yeah, why wouldn't
and
you?
I was like, holy shit, Gene Hackman's dead. Like, motherfucker, Gene Hackman. Like, I can't believe it. He's young, because Gene Hackman, like, this is totally, I'm a fucking non sequitur, but Gene Hackman defined my success as an entertainer in Hollywood because he didn't start getting famous until he was 50.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I always hung my hat on Gene Hackman. Yeah, yeah. And like, if he can do it, I can do it. Yeah, so yeah. Like, me and my buddy Obi, our fucking guy was Gene Hackman. We're like, hey, at least we'll have Gene Hackman's career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm so upset. I went to go call my buddy Obi, and as I'm walking out of the door to call Obi, you're like, didn't realize what a big Gene Hackman fan you were until now. And I fucking lost it. And I went to go up on stage after you, and all I could think about was fucking Gene Hackman.
How your world just got rocked by the false death.
There's only two comics that have ever done that to me where I can't stop thinking about their joke while I'm on stage. It's you and that kid with not Down syndrome, but he's an autistic dude that does stand-up. Really
autistic.
Fucking funny. Yeah. A guy asked me if I wanted to go to the movies the other day, or I asked my friend if he wanted to go to the movies, and he said, I can't. I've got to polish my robot. Just tell me you don't want to be fucking friends with me. What's that guy's name? Like John Paul? Gene Paul?
Shit, I don't know.
Some dude, man. He's funny as fuck.
Yeah.
Funny as shit. Very, very. There's obviously, I hated to rat him out like he's the dude with autism. Maybe he's doing a bit. Like, maybe it's a bit, but I don't think it is.
Yeah,
all I know is that him and Eddie Eft almost got a fist fight one time.
Holy shit.
Whatever this guy's name is. It's like James Earl Jones or John Earl Ray. It's one of three-named dude. He's got a bowl cut, and he's alternative.
Doesn't ring a bell. Right. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just blanking.
But, so that was like – you I think, consistently have been the definition of the dude who I – like, you knew of well before you ever knew.
Yeah.
And then you were also the definition of the dude, and Ari Shaffir and I talk about this a lot, the guy that I was like, all you have to be is nice to someone, and then you can be friends with them, as opposed to you've been in this secret competition with how great their careers are and how shitty yours is, and then letting that spill into the first time you meet them.
That's something that, you just have to fucking learn at some point.
Yeah.
Unless you're a guy who... You know, one of these success stories out here where it's like, oh, yeah, he did 4 open mics when he was 24, and now he's on a NBC show or whatever. Like
Donald Glover. I'm joking, by the way.
His material is amazing, if you've ever seen him on stage. It's amazing stuff. So true.
Really? I haven't seen him. God. I was just saying what I heard.
Oh, man, DG.
I've never, for the record, everyone, I said one thing about Tom Green last week, and everyone's like, fuck you, say that to his face. I was like, I didn't even say anything bad. No, Donald Glover is a very sweet
guy. I bet we could sit here and talk shit about Donald Glover for 3 hours, and you won't get one fucking email. And that's nothing against. I am friends with Donald.
He seems like a nice enough guy. But he just has been extremely successful at such a young age. You're like,
there's a lot of guys like that, and you can't. That's. I mean, I went through that phase. I started late with
how
comedy.
Old were you start comedy?
I was almost 30. I was 29 when I started. And
I always thought I started late. I started at 26.
Yeah. If I had it to do over, I would have fucking dropped out of high school when I was 15 and started.
If I had it to do over,
I'd be dead by now from fucking drug overdose, but my folks would have nice houses. I would have, banged a ton
Philly?
Of supermodels. Yeah.
I do not see that. Yeah. I see you getting tortured in Philly.
You know what? I've changed quite a bit. Like, I lived in Austin for 11 years.
Yeah.
After Philly. Well, I left Philly right out of, I got a job at a bank in Philly right out of high school and just fucked off there. Got fired within a year and was like, well, I don't want to do that anymore. And just started traveling. Just went lived in Ireland for a while, lived in Oregon for a while.
I bet you slayed pussy in Ireland.
Oh, Irish girls don't let you fuck them.
What?
This was 96.
Yeah.
Playboy was just legalized there. the year I went there. Really? Yeah, Ireland's a very religious fucking country.
I almost fucked a girl from Ireland when I was in Scotland.
Yeah.
And Patrice O'Neill was in there were really thin walls.
Mm-hmm.
And Patrice O'Neill was in the middle room, like the middle living room. Our bedrooms were two wings of this really tiny living room. Yeah. And I mean, I'm telling you, nothing went sketchy at all. She was definitely drunk.
Yeah.
And she had been crying when I met her. But in the middle of like hooking up, she started crying and started going, I'm going to die an old maid. And I heard Patrice's fucking cackle because he could hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm fucking, ugh. But yeah, so you were in Ireland.
Not across the board, but it's like there was, I didn't slay a lot of Irish pussy there. I mean, I did, you know, I had fun. I was 22 or 21, 22.
And you have no, and did you go to college?
I dabbled. I went to Penn State for a year in like Philadelphia Community College for like a.
So you're 22, you have nothing. You just get to go nothing. Out.
No, I just go. Lived in Amsterdam for a while, lived in Ireland. And then that's what I would do. I would leave Philly and go somewhere. Like I lived in Oregon for less than a year and would be like, okay, I get it. This place is great. I'm going to go back to Philly, see what's going on there. And go back to Philly. Everybody's exactly where you fucking left them, doing exactly the same thing. Nothing against Philly or anything. It's any place you go. And so I'm like, okay. So I'd hang out in Philly for a few, you know, for a month or two. And I'd be like, all right, well, everything's the same here. I'm going to go to fucking Ireland and hang out there. So
it's the fucking greatest decision. If you're fucking 22 years old right now, that is the greatest decision you can make in life. Because what you learn in those places and the stories you accrue and how it helps shape who you are is you can't pay for it.
Well, and having a world view, especially for young kids, not to sound like a fucking old asshole, but I think I'm not 40 yet. But I think it should be mandatory. Right out of high school, kids should have to fucking go. Like, you know how like kids will, oh, I backpacked through Europe and I went to 22 countries. And it's like, yeah, but you were there for 18 days. Like,
and you fucking Americanized the fuck
out. You went to every fucking TGI Fridays across the fucking.
The McDonald's in Ireland is extremely different. Yeah.
So, I mean, I do think that you should be forced to travel or just to get some kind of worldview because it's. People are just so – Americans are just so wrapped up in themselves and have no – it's like, oh, yeah, England. What's that in Europe? Oh, yeah, I don't know. Big Ben. Like, but to just – not even get out of the country. Get out of your fucking – go further than 10 square blocks away from where you hang out all the time. Like, just – there's so much shit out there. This country's huge. Like, if you live in fucking New York, go to, like, upstate New York even. Like, if you live in a city.
Dude, go to upstate Pennsylvania is sketchy as fuck.
Yeah.
I remember driving through there one time doing a college and being terrified of white people for the first time in my life.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, these dudes are not the white people I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
But yeah, so I forget what we were talking about.
You were in 22. You go to Ireland.
I would move places for brief amounts of time, you know, like a year or less.
Yeah.
And then I'd go back to Philly. And I was doing that for, you know, a few years and then came back to Philly and I was working in theater back then, not like, I was an actor or anything. I was a carpenter and like a tech guy, you know, stagehand. I built sets and fucking road managed, touring shows and stuff. So even when I would like fuck off for like upwards of a year, I could come back and call them and be like, hey, are you guys, you know, I would always have work.
Yeah.
And, the last time I went back, I was just like, yeah, everything was, you know, everything again, exactly. Like, I really spent very minimal time there over 3 years. Came back and it's like, everything's exactly where I fucking left it. I had a friend who was going to Austin. She had just bought a house down in Austin. She would go there in the summers. And she was like, well, I'm going to Austin. I'm leaving.
Is before Austin is as hip as it is today.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was still like this is, you know, probably 7-8 years after Slacker came out. That kind of really blew Austin wide open where it's like, whoa, there's this place where you can just go fucking hang out and goof off. Yeah, yeah. And it's a great place to live. I mean, this was 97. I moved to Austin. My friend's like, she's like, well, if you want to come to Austin, check that out. It's great. And I had actually been through there for a night with a touring play that I was with. And I wanted to, you know, I felt like, okay, this is, I'm like 23 now. I should probably figure out what I want to do, you know, just kind of get in some direction.
You realize you're becoming, everyone that's listening to this, you're becoming their Gene Hackman. I swear to God, everyone that listens to our group of friends podcasts, that small community of podcasts, ultimately, I get a lot of emails, and I'm sure you do too, about people wanting to get into stand-up and going, I want to do it. Do you have any advice or whatever? Mm. And all of them are fucking 25, 26-year-old dudes who are like, is it too late? And now you're going to become their Gene Hackman. He started at 29. I can do it.
Well, yeah, if you want to live in a one-bedroom apartment in Silver Lake, have $800 in the bank at the moment. Sure.
Hey, everyone has $800 in the bank. I remember one time I had a friend, Caleb Moody, who's now like a successful actor, and he had just had a kid, I think, or something, and we were coming back from a poker tournament, and he was like dropping me off, and I was drunk. I was real fucking drunk. He was like, I'm broke, man. I shouldn't say this. Man, fuck it. I'm sure he didn't care. He was like, I'm broke, and I got the kid coming, and I'm just fucking, I'm freaked out, man. I'm freaked out. And I gave him this really moving speech about how I remember that time in my life.
Yeah.
When Leanne was about to give birth to Georgia, and I had no money, and I called my dad, and he laughed and hung up. And he was like, and then he called back. He's like, you're a man. Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
And then hung up again. And I was like, what? And then I felt proud. I go, one day you'll look back, Caleb, and you'll realize, you know. Like, I gave him this moving speech from where, from the mountaintop I was sitting on.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I walked in the house and Leanne told us we were broke. And I went, what the fuck? I just told someone we had fucking money. You can't tell me we're broke. She's like, we have no fucking money.
Yeah.
You need to start selling a CD or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh.
And that's the best. You know you're going to wind up with the best product when your CD is made just so you can buy diapers with.
I edited it myself. So fucking bad.
Did you record it at the Laugh Stop?
Yeah.
That's where everybody did their first CD.
Yeah. I remember Pete was like, hey, I'll record it for you. So we recorded six shows.
That fucking ass. Did you get along with Pete?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, I hated that.
A lot of people hated Pete.
He's a dick to me. I was this close to punching him in the fucking face one night.
God,
and I'm not even a violent guy anymore.
He loved me. He loved me because of Bobby Kelly. Loved Bobby Kelly, and Bobby Kelly told him I was cool.
Yeah.
And so... So we got along, but, that and I could do over an hour. All he cared about really was selling drinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all he cared. And he's like, if you can do over an hour, fuck yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Do an hour 30. I'll sell drinks the whole time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got along with Pete fine.
Yeah. There's something about me. He just didn't like, he was fucking busted my balls from the minute I walked in there. And,
you know what it is? And I'm sure this is speculated for me, but it's the same reason I don't hang out at UCB.
Yeah.
So whatever that I look like, the guy that made everyone's fucking high school a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
And maybe I don't look like that as much now, but I definitely grew up looking like that, and I definitely looked like that in college. And when I started comedy, I fucking looked like that.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, it's the same thing that makes Pete go, "I like this guy."
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know him. I can say.
Looks like the kind of guy you could beat up a fag with.
That's what, you know, it's the same reason every time I have a gay waiter, they look at me like, ugh. it's the same, like, it's the same thing is that, like, you know, like, you also, like, he saw you as something that.
He just, you know, it's just a bully. He's a bully, basically.
He was
definitely
a bully.
Whether or not, you know, if somebody's going to prejudge you by your looks saying, oh, this guy looks like a bully.
Yeah.
You're not. I mean, all they have to do is fucking talk to you for 2 seconds, listen to your fucking squeal, giggly schoolgirl laugh, and they'll be like, "Oh, this guy's great."
Take a look at my IMDb. But Pete he's a loser.
Yeah, yeah. He travels around the country and eats food and jumps off of fucking chairs or something.
He's an ass clown. I got called on Twitter one time, and I'll never forget that fucking comment. Who's this ass clown, Bert the Conqueror? And I was like, I replied, "It's me, and I'm reading these."
Pete was just a bully, and he fucked with me the whole time. The first time I was there, I was featuring for Tim Northern. You ever meet Tim Northern?
I heard Tim Northern.
Tim's Black great dude. Guy. Yeah. Super funny dude.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to him in forever. He left me a message a while ago.
I really like Tim Northern.
He's great. He's one of those guys, though, that's like just cannot get the personal side of his life together. Like, he's a fucking Chappelle level funny guy, he's a good comic.
I mean Chappelle's a big reach only for anybody to say, he is a funny dude, and he's really cool, and he's really fun to hang out with. I worked the Cleveland Improv with him one time, all black room, and he is not a black act by any stretch of the means, and we had a fucking commiserating weekend. where we just hung out and just fucking, I think he was a big drinker, still is probably.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, that's the most of the comics that I got to know really well had to be big drinkers.
So wait, so you go to Austin, mm-hmm. and then I feel like
after after all the moving around, go to Austin because I wanted to go someplace where I was like, I want to go not like put roots down, but like I'm going to go move to a place.
Was there any part of your personality? Because I definitely went through this in going to high school, going to college, and then moving to New York, mm-hmm. where you wanted to change the way people saw you before?
No. No, I never really had any kind of like identity crisis thing. Like I was never like, I never had any kind of labels in high school and stuff. You know, I kind of got along with everyone. Like, I mean, I could be a jerk off or whatever, and I had my little cliques, but there was no, you couldn't pigeonhole me like, oh, he's the fucking, he only hangs out with those guys. Cause yeah. I had friends from, you know, like the fucking stoner guys and the jock guys, whatever, you know, basically if you fucking thought I was funny.
Yeah.
And you, like, if you got it and you could make me laugh, then we're friends. I don't give a fuck if you're, you know, I don't care what, you know, what kind of fucking deal you have. Like, yeah. if we relate, then we're cool. So I didn't really want to, like, reinvent myself, but I wanted to, because Philly's a total kind of place. Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I like playing music. I like art. You know, I can paint and fucking draw and shit. I like doing cartoons and comedy, something I thought about. It was just any kind of performance, filmmaking. I was just interested in all this stuff, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I knew Austin is a great place to cut your teeth in, like, because it's a supportive community of stuff. Where in Philly, if you're like, hey, I'm going to do stand-up. Why don't you come to see my show? Fuck this fucking guy. Who's he think he is?
You think you're funny?
Are you fucking better? And I'm like, okay, yeah, we'll come. We'll fuck up your show.
Florida's got that mentality, too. And I'm not shitting on my friends from Florida, but there is the definite, like, I didn't have the kind of friends. I said this to Leanne the other day, and not that, but I said I had most people's definition of the word friend is a guy who supports you and mm-hmm. helps you grow as a friend and picks up from the airport. Mm-hmm. My definition of the word friend growing up is a dude you let call you faggot. That's what we were, was dudes. And that word was ingrained in our head at a very young age. And then once you learn that word, that was stuck there. And then I never had friends that were like, dude, you're really funny. You should try this. They were like, who the fuck do you think you are?
Right.
And so I had to move to New York to start stand up because I was like, I need to go to a place where no one knows me and people go, oh, maybe mm-hmm. he is funny. I mean, my friends always said I was funny growing up, but they were like, you're funny to us.
Yeah.
Like I had a girl that told me, I dated a girl for the 5 years one time and I broke down one night in bed and I told her, I want to be a comedian. I really want to be a comedian. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, honey, you're not smart funny. You're like dumb funny.
Well, fucking then you should be a billionaire if that's the case.
But yeah, I know what you're saying. So then you go to Austin and then like.
And I didn't even start. I lived in Austin for, you know, 5 years about before I even started doing stand up.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I went to a couple open mics because I didn't know. Like the girl that I moved there with did these like puppet shows and stuff, and like these weird kind of puppet shows, and they would do them at bars, so it wasn't like for kids.
Yeah,
and they were cool, and I would open for her sometimes, but not doing like stand up. I would do like these weird fucking characters, or you know, act like I had a fucking brain problem and play songs on a keyboard, you know, just real kind of performance arty, but funny stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd gone to a couple open mics at that time thinking like, oh, well, you know, maybe I can do this kind of stuff here. And, it just wasn't, I was like, fuck this scene. These guys are all a bunch of fucking unfunny dicks. Like, and I'm friends with a lot of those guys now.
Who are you talking about? Like, Fairbanks was out of Austin.
Well, that's when I got back into it. When I met him, there was like this new wave. Cause like, I walked away from the clubs. And again, I was like 23. I had a fucking huge chip on my shoulder.
Dude.
I thought I was like the funniest fucking guy on the planet. I thought I was going to walk into this open mic, slay, and then people be scrambling to fucking give me money and contracts and shit.
I remember thinking that when I moved to New York out of college, mm-hmm. that people were going to have to offer me a pretty fat deal for me to start doing stand-up. Yeah. So I was in Rolling Stone. I was a draw. I was a fucking draw. So, but I know exactly. You don't have to defend.
Yeah, and I did, you know, toot my own horn, but the first open mic I went to, I did really well. Yeah. I mean, I don't remember. I didn't even really have, like, jokes per se. It was just kind of, like, bitching about stuff that was bothering me. I don't even remember. But it went over well, and afterwards, a handful of the comics who, you know, who were there came up and were like, oh, wow, how long have you been doing this? Did you just move here? And I was like, oh, tonight was my first night. I moved here like 2 years ago.
No, is Howard Kremer still in around?
Howard, they were doing Austin Stories at that time.
Okay, so Jesus Christ. So how old are you right now? Like 26 at the time?
No, this was probably 98. So I was 25.
Yeah, I had just started. I started stand up in. I was just graduating college.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like, right. Yeah, that's your whole story.
I was fucking in college forever.
Yeah. So I went to these open mics and they were like, oh yeah, keep coming back. There are other open mics. And I was like, okay. And went to a couple others and it was like this, the comics weren't very welcoming. It was this clip. Do you know, Howard Beecher, John O'Connell, J.R. Brow.
I feel like I know John O'Connell. I don't know.
Either way, these are, and these guys are all friends with me now, but it was like, they're all about 5 years older than me maybe. And had been, they're like in the comedy scene. Yeah. And then this like cocky 23-year-old guy who's funny, but I wasn't like, you know, very social with them. And so I just felt like they were fucking me. Like I'd show up for an open mic. They'd be like, you know what? The list got full. And like I'd sit there all night and they'd be like, we can't put you on. I'm sorry. Like too many people dropped in. And,
yeah.
And I'd just be like, fuck you. Fuck this fucking dumb scene. And you know, and I didn't know how comedy worked.
Fuck.
I didn't give a fuck. And I also thought too, like all these open mics I would go to, I would just write new shit for each one.
Yeah.
And I'd go and I'd see these same guys going to the same jokes. I'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? I heard you do this lame ass shit last week. And the reason I can't go on is you came in to do your fucking groundbreaking Sean Connery impression for everyone. Yeah. And so I was like, fuck that noise. And so I kept doing shit at bars, like weird fucking, like a fucking dress as a clown and like just all these weird characters just to fuck with people. I had this goal to have somebody beat me up after a show just to like, I was like, I want to push people's buttons so much to where I get the shit beat out of me after a show. Never happened. Thank God.
Did you ever hear about Harmony Korine? Harmony Korine tried to do a documentary about getting beaten up because he thought that the ultimate comedy was tragedy, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
To watch someone get beat up, you could make it comical like Fatty Arbuckle.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I am paraphrasing off of something I might have read, could have possibly dreamt 10 years ago, okay? But he, so they go to, they're talking about this thing, and they talk to him, and then he's going off to do it. And then they come back, and they meet him in the hospital. Uh-huh. And they're like, so how is it going? And he goes, well, I drastically underestimated how quick it was to beat up someone who can't fight.
There's no, I mean, in the movies, and this isn't, everybody's heard this before, but it's like those fucking 10-minute long fight scenes, nobody can fight for 10 minutes. It's, you have to be a peak physical shape to fight for more than fucking like 3 minutes.
Yes. It's so,
and it's like, and there's no, very rarely is it a fair, like back and forth exchanging blows. It's one, you know, like some wrestling, like shoving and pushing and punching, and then one guy gets the other guy on the ground, and it's just like fucking pound. Then that's it. Like somebody just gets pounded.
He said there was like he'd go up to bouncers and like try to be funny and slap them.
Oh,
and then he said he had like, I guess I'm saying, he said like 7 fights, 10 mm-hmm. fights, and he had maybe like 15 minutes of video for this documentary. And the last fight, the guy knocked him out unconscious, then propped his foot up on the curb and cracked his fucking shin. And I was like, now once again, fucking, like I said, I have no fucking recollection of where I read this or how I heard of it, but that just to me I was like,
No, I've seen fucked up shit in Philly. Like I grew up in a weird neighborhood, and a buddy of mine, one of my best friends I met him in high school, and he lived in an even more fucked up neighborhood than I did. And
where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the Northeast, like Tacony, Mayfair section of Philly. And my buddy John lived in Olney, which is, you know, it was way more fucked up than where I was from. Just like a lot more assholes. And his group of friends were like funny guys who literally are like, I know it's a cliche, but I don't know how many of them are dead. Maybe only a couple, but there's a handful of them in prison. Like they're just... Yeah. And they were like funny guys, but they were fucking psychos. Like they would rob people and mug people like for fun and like, you know, fucking just pick fights with people for fun. Curb guys, like the same as the leg thing, but break their fucking teeth out of their head.
Fish hooking.
Dude, it's and that's like when I realized, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if there was like an actual turning point, but I was just like, I don't fucking belong in this shit, man. Because I'm going to be the guy getting curbed one of these days.
Oh, fuck. Because
I can't fucking fight. And I mean, I can, you know. Well, geez, at this point, if a grown man wanted to fight me, I'd probably get my ass kicked by anybody. But
oh yeah,
because they're like strong and stuff.
Dude, some people practice.
Yeah, yeah, that's
like,
the thing.
That's from the fact that there are people out there like that practice fighting.
Yeah,
and that I think I'm going to hold a fucking what I do now. And I said this a very long time ago on something. I'm sure I've said it on something, but now when I get cut off in traffic and I get really fucking enraged and I want to fucking and it's a dude.
Oh yeah,
and he starts talking shit. I let him get the best of me publicly. I let him best me so that he feels vindicated in talking shit to me.
You should flirt with them when they're doing it.
I
start
know.
Start blowing them kisses and making the blowjob motion.
I know. No, I'm not. I want to look like he flustered me and he bested me. Because I know that if I endorse that behavior, he'll continue that behavior.
Yeah.
And one day he'll run into some dude that beats the living shit out of him.
Yeah.
So that's the way I look at that now. So, but yeah, I mean, I can't. I'm not a fist fighter at all.
No, I don't want to. Although I have had a few incidents lately with, there was a guy that I fucking, he pulled the biggest dick move. I was waiting to turn right. I was in Glendale or fucking, yeah, Glendale. Or no, not Glendale, Burbank. And I'm at a stop sign going to turn right. And sat there for a minute. I think I was, you know, I had to meet somebody for lunch and was just making sure that I was, you know, in the right area.
Yeah.
Looked down for a minute before I turned. This fucking cocksucker in a Mercedes behind me goes around me. And I start turning too. And he goes around me. There's a parking spot there I was going to take. Goes around me, then jams on his brakes and gets in the parking spot. And I, my head almost fucking, I was like, what the fuck? And like pulled up next to him and was like, you fucking cocksucker, you motherfucker. And he's like, gives me the finger. And I just like, I fucking floored it up the road, found another parking spot, parked, ran down to where I was going to, I mean, who knows what would happen.
What happened?
I could. He got out of his car and fucking went into whatever building he was going to. I think he probably got out of his car and ran, like, you know, oh, fuck, this guy is going to kill me. And he could have probably killed me, like, you know, but I do get this explosive temper sometimes.
I lost that, not recently, probably 2009.
Mm-hmm.
I know the date because it was when my hour special came out. And I was doing the show with Fairbanks. We did a show called Reality Bites Back. Me, Schumer, Fairbanks,
Clay
Grant.
Michael Ian Black.
And Michael Ian Black hosted, and we were all driving to go we were driving to go do a So You Think You Can Dive. That was the segment. And I needed a bathing suit. My sisters had my bathing suit. They lived above the Starbucks on Detroit and Wilshire. I don't know. That's very specific.
Okay.
But that's the Starbucks. So I lived on Detroit. Mm-hmm. So I drove down Detroit to where they were. I had to actually do a loop.
Yeah.
Drove up Detroit to where they were, their apartment was, and I kind of blocked like two spaces. But I was just, they were just gonna. It was like 7 in the morning. They were just gonna throw a bathing suit down to me. So I blocked two spaces, and I get out and I hop over, and they're there. They throw it, and I catch it. Now in this time, a dude in a teal BMW has a hissy fit that I'm blocking two spaces, and he starts like, and it's a stick, so you can hear it go zoom, 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 like he's like. Trying to like really fucking pissed. Now, I don't notice any of this, but I do notice it going on, but I'm like, I don't think anything about it.
Yeah.
Get my car, kind of back out, get to that light on Detroit and Wilshire. Now there's a Starbucks on that corner where everyone's out having coffee at 7 in the morning, all the alcoholics. So he comes out and he starts saying something as he goes into the Starbucks. I thought, now when I tell the story, when I told it to my wife, I said the wrong Louis. He looked kind of like Louis C.K. So I thought it was Louis C.K. And I thought he was saying hi to me. So I rolled down my window. When I told my wife, I said, Louis Anderson, by the way.
Right,
totally different story when you hear Louis Anderson. I rolled down my window, and he goes, learn how to drive, asshole. And I go, what the fuck did you say? And
still,
now, mind you,
still could have been Louis.
My wife's going, Louis Anderson? Louis Anderson? You thought this was Louis Anderson?
Yeah.
So I rolled out. I go, what the fuck did you say? He goes, learn how to drive, asshole. And I go, what the fuck? And I throw it in park. I get out of the car. I stand up out of my car in front of everyone having coffee.
Yeah.
I go, step out into the road and be a man.
Yeah.
And he went, and walked inside.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what I'm talking about. Then I thought, what if he knew how to fight? He could have knocked out all my teeth, and I would have had to go to fucking shoot a TV show with no teeth. I was like, fuck that.
Yeah.
I am done. You toured with Michael Ian Black, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, what's, like, I worked with him, and I really got a genuine kick out of him.
Uh-huh.
But how did you guys get hooked up?
We did a couple festivals together, and you know what I think the... he talks about that. I think what didn't hurt, we did Aspen together, and we wound up doing this like Twitter based show where like both of us were on stage. I don't remember how it went, but that was our first interaction, whatever. Yeah. We got along, and I was a fan of the state, and so, you know, obviously I knew.
Huge fan of the state.
Yeah.
I was a massive fan of the state.
Yeah, so was
I. As a matter of fact, when I was in college, and I was, right after I went to Russia and got involved with those the mob,
mm-hmm.
we backpacked through Europe, and I was in Greece, and I ran into the state.
Oh, okay. They That's right. They did a partying, fucking...
They were partying in Greece
yeah.
when I was in college, and I fucking met them, and David Wayne and I, like, had beers. Joe Latrulio was there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Kerry Kenny was, but, like, all the whole state
yeah,
was
yeah.
there.
They, I think I read something about it. They did do, like, a backpacking. They did, like, the same thing. They went across yeah. Europe one summer.
And so that was my connection. And then when I met... As a matter of fact, David Wayne was my only contact in New York when I first moved to New York to get in stand-up.
Oh, okay.
I called him up, and he said, yeah, you can come down. We're doing the show Stella.
Oh, yeah.
Come down and give you free tickets. That night on stage, I saw, like, fucking Janine Garofalo, mm. all those dudes. I mean, it was, like, blew my
yeah,
mind.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but...
But we had done... So, yeah, we did the Aspen thing, met there, and then wound up in Montreal that same year doing that... taping the HBO... stand-up show, funny as hell. It was only on in Canada, which is kind of great because you get paid the same. And it's like, nobody's even going to see this.
And dude, Canadians are the fucking best.
Yeah, they love it.
They're like, they all have fucking money.
Mm-hmm.
They go out to see shows in droves.
Yeah.
They support the living fuck out of us.
They're like, great.
I mean, I kind of wish I was born Canadian so I could fucking do a TV show up there.
Yeah.
Because, like, Kenny and Spenny, have you ever seen that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fucking,
it's great.
I fucking love Canadians. That's yeah. great. Do you tour up there at all?
Yeah, here and there. I think I do enough there, actually, because the place, you know, it's like Vancouver, Montreal.
Edmonton.
Edmonton, I don't know if I've done. Calgary, I've done a couple times. I'm going up to, where's Rumors? Winnipeg.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know.
Canada's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Wait. So
we did. So we wound up doing, we're taping this show. It's a, you know, like a stand-up show. And Michael was kind of just getting back into stand-up, I think. Like, that was never really his forte.
Yeah, I don't think he started until he was, like, in his late 30s.
He has a CD from a while ago. So
oh, really?
He had done stand-up before, but it wasn't his, I didn't listen to his CD. But we had talked about it. He's like, yeah, I put out a CD a while ago, but yeah, it was never really his main thing. So he saw me, you know, we kept, you know, bumping into each other and saying hi. And then he every time I saw him, I was kind of just like rearranging my, or trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Cause it was only like a 10-minute spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to, you know, I just kept flip flopping on what I wanted to do. And he said something like, he's like, oh, are you, what do you, every time I say, do you keep just writing new sets or whatever? And I was like, nah, I'm just trying to figure it out. And I was like, but I just took a Xanax. So by the time we shoot, I'll be fine no matter what. And he was pretty, you know, he seemed a little worked up. And I was like, do you want a Xanax? And he was like, yeah, if you have one.
Yeah.
So I gave him a Xanax. And then a couple weeks later, I get a direct message on Twitter. He's like, hey, do you want to do a bunch of dates for not a lot of money with me? And so that's what I think what it was is, like, you know, he had to do a bunch of club dates to get ready to do this. He wanted to tape an hour special.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was just, you know, him and his agents or whatever were talking. It's like, who do you want to bring? And I think it was kind of like, well, you know, I got along with this guy. He gave me a Xanax and he's got a lot of club experience. Cause it's like, yeah, you know, I think he didn't want to go to, like, just like preach to the choir. Like,
no one...
he wanted to, like, cause he could have easily just taken, like, Jesse Klein or Kumail or, you know, just one of those New York alt people that fit that bill. But I think we were going to places where there were no hipsters. There weren't people who were filming. Like, we did Foxwoods and fucking,
really?
We did some weird, like, Florida dates and stuff where people were like, oh, who's the, you know, they'd be looking at the marquee yeah. and be like, Michael Ian Black. Oh yeah. He looks familiar.
And they,
oh, Jeff Dunham's next week. Like, yeah. you know, so it was like those kind of places where they'd be like, oh my God, fucking Larry the Cable Guy was here. He sat in his same bar.
Now here's the thing that frustrates me about stand-up mm-hmm. is that, And I don't know if this happened with Michael Ian Black at all, but does his public persona of who people perceive him to be affect the way he writes or approaches the stage?
I don't think so. You know, it's weird. And then to finish that thought too, like, I think it was just kind of like, I was kind of like this bit of a comedy Sherpa for him in clubs where, you know, where it's like, you know, because he's working these shitty comedy clubs that he'd never worked
before. And he didn't grow up in them.
No, no. And
so he doesn't have any real perspective of oh, fuck that crowd.
Yeah, versus, I mean, you can live in your bubble.
Fuck that crowd.
Right, yeah. I mean, he was in a very, you know, solid, protective bubble of, like, Stella, the state. Like, he could probably, you know, sell out a 100-seat theater 30 days in a row in New York doing a whatever, stand-up. But yeah, but as far as a broad appeal, he never really tried that out.
But he was massively successful in a broad appeal in the VH1. What was the 80s or something?
Yeah, remember.
And Ed. He was in Ed.
Oh, he's got.
So he's got, like, he's got a fucking.
You know, he was the. Do you remember the?
Yes, I know
the sock puppet.
The sock puppet
for
Pets.com or something.
Yeah, yeah. Got a million bucks for that.
Really? I remember asking.
I don't know if that's talking out of school. I mean, that was fucking 20 years
Tosh
ago.
Tosh got $700,000 for the Taco Bell.
Yeah.
That's what I love when people tell me money.
But Michael's like. Michael's.
One of my favorite things. Don't mean judge how I'm doing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude. I went down this. I'm out of it now, but there was just like a month ago, every single person that came up in conversation or that I met or whoever popped into my head, there's this site I found where you could Google people's net worth.
What? Oh, networth.com?
It was something like that.
It's networth.com. I do it all the time. Right, Bill Burr's worth $6 million.
Is that, well, there's some of them are not accurate, though.
No, it's one the one that I Google.
Okay.
Yeah, because my name came up.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Fuck, now I sound like a fucking douchebag. I sound like such a douchebag. I will tell you candidly, when I go to someone's house, you can Google to find out how much I paid for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that for me, that access is it's just like, oh, it's fucking addictive. But
and it's weird. Like, I mean, I'm curious about stuff like that just because
I'm massively curious.
Past like high school, you know, I'm like, what's that cost? Like $100? Like, I just have no idea what shit costs and stuff, and also what people are worth. Yeah, so I was doing that for fucking everybody. But Michael's like, we got along great. Like, because he does have that very aloof, kind of personality. A lot of people think, you know, he could come off as a dick. I thought the whole wife and kids thing was a joke. Not that, I mean, I was, well, because they would talk about it like in Stellar, Michael and Michael have issues.
Yeah.
Like there were every now and then it would be something about like his wife and kids, which would be in a comedic thing. But I always thought like, that's hilarious because there's no way this guy's got a wife and kids.
Oh,
he could possibly be gay. But I can't see this guy raising a child, you know, and it's all true. And, but real fucking super nice guy. We got along really well on the road and we're still buddies, you know. It's not like we talk on the phone all the time, but it's like,
it's the way all of it kind of works out.
Me and Henry Phillips were talking about that the other night. Where it's
Henry
like,
Phillips is one of the funniest dudes.
Henry's one of the funniest guys.
Henry's one of those guys that did something that I would never do. But I was so grateful that he did it. I was in the road in some fucking shit town. And Dayton. Oh, sorry.
Oh,
Dayton. Fuck.
Nah, Dayton. You're a shit town. You know
Dayton. It was Dayton.
Wiley's?
Dayton. I was at the Funny Bone. He was at Wiley's.
Okay.
And he texted me or like hit me up on Twitter or something. And was like, hey, we're both in Dayton. You want to go get lunch? I was like, hey. He's like, bring your feature. I'll bring mine. So the four of us got lunch and we laughed so hard we almost got kicked out of the fucking place. He is one of the funniest fucking dudes.
Henry's got the best fucking stories.
His short about the guy that's awkward.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do not know how to say it. I don't know where to tell you to find this. Other than it's got to be at Henry Phillips at his website.
You know what? He's got a YouTube channel, which I think is Henlips.
Henlips, yeah. Just Google Henry Phillips.
The fuck, what was it? Was it called The Loser? No.
It was called The Loner?
The Loner.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it is the finest piece of comedic acting and writing that I've seen in a short in my entire life. The fact that it's
Have you seen his movie?
No, I haven't.
Punching the Clown?
No.
Yeah, you put it in, watch it on Netflix tonight. It's
really
great. Yeah.
He is one of the nicest, coolest fucking. He's another guy. Like, he was a Bob and Tom guy that, like, there was a big Bob and Tom group at the time that were like blowing up when once again I was doing the fucking, I was headlining for $700 fucking Laughs Unlimited and just. And
well, give me their booking info when you get off.
The guy stole fucking money from me. Yeah. The guy's such a douchebag.
Oh, that's such a. Like, I know we keep getting off topic.
I haven't been on topic once. I'm the worst fucking... I don't even think of it as an interview.
But we started talking about, like, you know, that whole negative feeling about comics and stuff, like, with, you know, like, shit-talking or, like, you know...
Yeah.
Which, and you were saying you got over it. And that's something you have to get over. You can't...
I'm not totally over it.
Well, I mean, there's always going to be, like, the fucking... But you know what? Nobody's holding a gun to anybody's head to watch some shitbag sell out a fucking show without an act. And Dane Cook's success, like, you know, when everybody was shitting all over Dane Cook, like, I had this kind of enlightening probably about 6-7 years ago where, because I found that I had a little bit of a nervous breakdown at a certain point.
Was this at Stanhope's house?
It wasn't at Doug's house. No,
because there's another rumor I heard one time. They slipped you acid?
You brought it up briefly before, and it's like, it's gotten way crazy. Really? That's not the story. We could talk about it later, but, the fact that, I found that like every time you're hanging out with a group of comics or people after a Stanhope show, especially I was touring with Doug a lot then, the people who come up and want to talk to you, they just want to talk. They don't want to talk about people they like. They just want to talk about fuck Mencia, fuck Dane Cook.
Yeah.
And then I found, and it was the same in like, you know, my social comedy circles. And I was like, wait a minute, this is such a fucking negative existence. Every time I'm hanging out with people, we're just saying shit about people. What do I care if Dane Cook sells out Madison Square Garden every night for a year? That's not going to make people go, sorry, man, we can't listen to your comedy. We already fucking bought one. So, but Henry, going back to that with the, when I was talking to Henry the other night, he was saying that's like one cool thing about comedy is where, if you work with a guy once and you get along, then you're friends forever. Like, even if you don't see each other for 10 years, it's like, we worked at Wiley's together. Yeah. We worked in Dayton.
That's a really cool. The problem is when you're like, and I'm definitely, I think I suffer from the fact of being a big road drinker.
Oh, God. Well, that's why I'm laying off the sauce, is it was just getting unmanageable at a certain point. Like, well, you know, if I was in your shoes, it might be because you have to be responsible to a certain, like, you know, you can't hole up in your apartment and fucking binge for a couple days.
Well, I have a wife that holds me to a certain level of responsibility.
Yeah.
Like she knows that, when I'm on the road, like, as long as I don't cheat on her, don't get in fist fights, don't spend a ton of dickload of money, just drink beers. She always says, don't do shots. Shots are fucking, there's no reason to do them.
I stopped doing that a while ago, but I switched it to, I would get a beer and a Jameson on the rocks and sip on it.
I lived that life for a while.
Oh, well, and then it got to the point where, I mean, I could drink a bottle of Jameson.
Oh, I just bought a brand new one.
It just, you can't fucking.
Well, like, there's nowhere to live. It's like ultimately your dog chasing its tail, and you're just trying to level out. Like, trust me when I say, like, especially the day after I come off the road, I have a fucking serotonin depletion day.
Where
I am sitting there white knuckling myself, beating myself up for a million fucking things.
Yep.
The whole thing we were talking about like, I've definitely gone through nervous breakdowns.
Yeah.
And for very recently, I felt like I was on the verge of one. Mm-hmm. Like, very recently, I was waking up, you know, I'm doing the Travel Channel show. I'm doing the road when my weeks are off. So, like, I got a family. I'm writing a book. I have a documentary coming
out. Secret Gay Lover.
I got a gay lover. This fucking goddamn podcast. Fuck. If I could have started it all over again, I would have never fucking started it. fucking
Rogan's a good arm fucking, twister for that.
God, you know what, man? I'm glad I did it because, like, me and you would never get to, like, hang out like this for, like, an hour. But, you know, and that is awesome. But, man, I'm like, I was overwhelmed. And I started waking up at 3 a.m. every night with this, like, an energy, like a vibrating energy where my mind was spinning. And I was awake and it was spinning and I couldn't control it. And I was like, it was shouting out shit we need to do, shit people are saying about us, like bad stuff, negativity. And I was like trying to strike it from my brain and go like, get out of there, man. You don't need to be in there. We need good stuff. Like, I was thinking, I had a fucking dream one. I had a dream one night that woke me up about a dude breaking into our house and then me capturing and then holding a hostage, uh-huh. right? And then I woke up and I fucking talked to myself for 15 minutes about holding this dude hostage.
Yeah, yeah.
About what I was going to do to him and how yeah. I was going to fucking teach him a lesson. All of a sudden, I'm like 15 minutes later, I'm like, wait, am I really talking to myself about an imaginary dude breaking into my imaginary house?
Yeah.
And imaginarily holding a hostage?
Such a negative spiral you can easily yeah. get into. And
I do think alcohol lends into that.
Oh, it does.
Because it doesn't help you sleep better. Just fill with fucking sugar that's going to wake you up in the middle of the night.
Well, this is what I've been doing. Like, I haven't drank for, I mean, it's new, but like less than a month, a few weeks now.
Yeah.
And which is that's an extremely long run
statement.
For me. But I'm staying up. I drink a 12-pack of La Croix a day. You ever get that sparkling?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there? I love that.
That's a great, if you're trying to lay off the booze, that's a great thing because it's not like sweet. It's almost like, and it's something you can just compulsively drink. Like last night I was up writing all night and because that's my thing. Like I have this relation with writing and being productive. Like when I get inspired and giddy, I'm like, oh, yeah. fuck it. And I start fucking with people online and shit. I just get this crazy energy. And then that would be me at my desk with my computer, smoking a cigarette, and then just beer. Like, I, you yeah. know, drink until I can't write anymore. And that's last night I was doing, but with this canned sparkling water. And I'm sure, like, I had my windows open and stuff. And if my neighbor heard me, they're probably like, this guy's a fucking, because you can hear.
yeah.
Like, it's like every, like, 12 minutes. You know, you hear get up and psh, another one in a can go to
yeah.
fucking recycling.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, who the fuck drinks anything besides alcohol like that?
Either that or someone's telling you like 20 secrets.
Psh, you know, but, psh, so, but it doesn't, I mean, not to, and I'm not going to, you know, be one of these guys who like, just recently
I had a friend who quit drinking mm-hmm. and has become recently very successful.
Oh,
and
well, I know a bunch of
direct reflection of that.
Direct correlation with it's like, oh, yeah, no, I used to be fucking crazy. Or not. You don't even have to have a reputation yeah. as a drunk, which I know I have, you know, and I've been associated with tons of people. Yeah, I mean, we like to have fun. But there's, the people who clean up their act even just a little bit, it's like, oh, he got on a TV show?
Yeah.
Huh, and, 3 months after
we were at a party, and I said, let me get you a beer. And he goes, yeah, I'm good. And, and this guy was a big drinker. And I was like, really? He was like, yeah. I said, okay. And so I went back, and I said, did you quit drinking? And he goes, No, I just don't want a beer. And I was like, dude. Mm. And he goes, yes, I did, but don't tell anyone because I might start again.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I respect that. I respect like whatever you're going through, whatever, however you do it. Because I've had big stretches where I don't drink.
Yeah.
You know, it's how I lost the weight. Yeah. Because I just had to go through a big period where I was like, man, I got to clean my shit up. Now, for me, the road just kind of ties in.
Well, that's tough. And I have a lot of work coming up this month. Starting this weekend through fucking May, I'm
road
pretty much gone
or
every
Hollywood
week.
Work?
Road work,
yeah,
and that's gonna be challenging because I do want to stick to. I took a break a couple years ago from the drinking for like 5 months, and you know, I gotta say, fucking everything got a lot easier in that period.
Oh, it gets
I didn't have depressed. I never got depressed. All that beating yourself up, and. And it's just, it just seemed like there was more, I think you give off like a more kind of life positive energy. So it just attracts, I was like, oh, wow, all this cool shit's happening to me. I feel great all the time. My brain's firing on all cylinders. And, you know, and then obviously, you know, you just slowly, gradually like, all right, let's get a drink. Or I haven't, you know,
The thing is, don't beat yourself up over it. Like, just do what you're going to do.
Well, then this is what I did. I don't know. Did you ever fuck with medication for depression or anything?
As much as I will say I deal with depression, I don't really deal with depression.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a pretty, like, my version of depression is like, I'm on the road for 4 weeks abroad in a different country.
Mm-hmm.
My sleep's fucked up and I miss my kids.
Yeah.
So that's real. I think that is real.
Yeah. No,
like,
that's,
I don't deal with like,
we're humans. You're supposed to have emotions. You know?
And it's my nooks and crannies that kind of define me, but I don't deal like, I only say that for people that actually deal with depression. I don't really deal with
it. Well, I did. So, I started drinking again and, you know, which I love. I mean, that's actually, you know, when
I'm
I do interviews
right
and stuff now, and they're like, you know, what made you get into comedy? I'm like, honestly, fucking free beer.
Yeah.
That was a huge fucking incentive. And then like, and Stanhope kind of picked me up pretty early on. Like, I was only doing comedy for a couple of years, maybe, when he – not maybe 2 years when they let me open for him at the club. And I didn't even know who Doug was. I wasn't, like, lobbying.
Really?
But they banned me from the club because I did all this fucking crazy shit. I didn't know how comedy worked.
Yeah.
And they hired me to host a show, and I was just doing all this. I had plants in the audience. Like, it was just a whole fucking Andy Kaufman style –
yeah.
Craziness that I was doing. They were like, "You're fucking MCing. You can't do this shit."
Really,
and I'm like, "What the fuck does that mean?" I was like, "What's MCing mean? What's a feature? What are you talking about? I thought I got stage time at a place."
I love that you came at the art the way Banksy came at fucking at art. You know, like, you
well, but
came
that's
at
what
it, like,
I thought. I was like, "It's I like fucking with people." I'm yeah. like, "Wait. Well, what am I supposed to do? Talk about." Fucking Monica Lewinsky? Yeah, like, what the fuck am I supposed to do?
Ultimately, the answer is yes. That's what they want you to do.
So the club's like, you know, we love you, but you're a fucking asshole. And so then my phone rings, like, you know, a year later or a year and a half later, and Margie from the club in Austin says, Doug Stanhope's here next week. Dude, because she did like me. I mean, but they were just like, you can't fuck. You're too much of a fucking nut. And at this point I had started because other local comics like Fairbanks and stuff, that's when I got back into it. I was doing these shows around town with these other guys. Like, we had strippers and we showed videos and just like these insane kind of like sketch shows. And then they did an open mic after it and I stuck around, and that's when like Martha Kelly and Chris Fairbanks and Michelle Balloon was there. And
I know Michelle Balloon.
They were all like this new, I don't think Michelle does comedy anymore.
She did Last Comic Standing though, right?
I don't know. I think she might have done a premium blend, but either way, it was like, I was like, oh wow, these people are my age and they're funny. Where yeah. I didn't like all the, when I dabbled in it in like 99, everybody was like, you know, in their 30s and they seemed fucking bitter, and I didn't think any of them were funny, partially because I thought I was the funniest guy on the planet. Oh, no one else was. But, so that's what got me back into it. Seeing those guys and, fuck, I forgot.
Stanhope.
Oh, right, yeah. And then, so I had met those guys. And then Fairbanks was like, because, yeah, I was doing all this weird shit. I dressed, remember that movie Powder?
Yeah.
Well, I fucking, you know, got a bald thing and painted myself all white. And then I had these series of tubes going through my suit.
Yeah.
Where the whole idea was I was Powder, but I had like five penises. But they weren't all in my crotch. They were throughout my body. Every time I'd tell a joke, one of my dicks would pee, but it would just like, you would see pee like coming out of my side.
That stand-up shakes that out of people.
You know what? I struggle with that sometimes, but I
hate
all...
that, because that, for me, right now,
mm-hmm.
would be the most interesting thing to see.
Well, and you know what, though? It's not that comedy, this is something I've learned.
Clubs.
Because, well, clubs, but it's also like, you know what? My main reason was like, Fairbanks. So he saw me doing all this weird stuff and he was like, oh, you should come to an open mic. And I was like, yeah, I want to do it again. And like, we wound up hanging out and I was like, kind of telling him some ideas I had. And he's like, well, you know, I mean, you should just write, like, why don't you write like 7 minutes worth of jokes? Because he was going to Houston to feature for somebody and getting $600.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, you're going to get $600 just to go tell jokes for 20 minutes a night? Like, I'm funnier than you. But, you know, that's what I was thinking in my head. Was like, well, wait, that's how much I make for loading fucking trucks at the concert hall.
Yeah.
For like, you know, a week.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I probably take home $600 for working 40 hours. You know, I was getting like $14-15 an hour.
And
so.
It's a lot less, it's more user friendly to just write jokes and have a notebook in your back pocket than a white powder.
I started paying attention. It was like, oh, okay. So I like made up some jokes and it was still a little off the wall. So then by the time, I do think, before going back to the stand up thing, a lot of that, because I do look back at some of this shit that I did, because I did some fucking elaborate shit that I love. I got hair extensions one time just so I could have a mullet to go to an open mic so nobody would recognize me. Like, I had a whole fucking thing going. And where the whole thing ended, tore off my pants. I had a big shit stain in the back of my underwear. Like, I painted it brown.
Yeah.
And I ran through the audience in my underwear with a shit stain. Nobody knew what to think of me. I was this fucking, like, dumb guy. I had a broken nose and these Oakley sunglasses. And you could see the bruises and the patches because I didn't want anyone to recognize, because I knew everyone. Yeah. I had these, like, teeth implants that didn't look weird. Like, they weren't
Shut
like Bubba teeth,
fuck
but
up.
It like changed your face and then the mullet. So like nobody, and I was wearing a like track suit with tearaway pants, did all these really bad jokes, But like people were scared because they're like, this guy, because the jokes were kind of like a little aggressive, but I had a broken nose and I told a story about how I got my nose broke. I forget what it was. And then ultimately, I don't think music played because that would have seemed too set up. But I told a joke and then tore off my pants, was wearing tighty whities with a big brown diarrhea stain in the back that I did with watercolors. And then I just go running through the crowd with a pair of scissors, cutting my mullet off and throwing it in people's drinks. And I just run out the door and run away. And they never see me again.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, and there's tons. I mean, I fucking have... I did a ton of shit when I was first starting like that.
But imagine,
that's
imagine
what I like.
What you could do now.
Well, but
this is,
but it's about sticking to your guns, I think. Because like, instead of me going, well, I want to make $600 in Houston. What do I need to do? Write 20 minutes worth of jokes about diarrhea in my dick?
Yeah.
Done. And then that just turned into this thing where I'm like, okay, this is what I'm doing now. This is easy. Okay, I achieved my goal. I make $600. Now what?
Yeah.
And but I do think like if I had instead of, you know, just going, what do I need to do to go to clubs? If I had just been like, you know what, I'm going to go to LA and just fucking do this shit there. I mean, I do think I was a bit of a coward with it where I was like, I'll do whatever anybody wants. What do you want me to do?
No, it's not cowardly. It's not cowardly at all.
But it wasn't sticking because then you see guys
guns,
like, you know,
guns,
like Zach.
Your guns are extremely exhausting.
Yeah.
Like, to have to come up with things like that and not like, you know, it's like.
But you see guys like Brett Gelman and like, you know, there's. But just people who do like you
think
know
about
who are
Zach when he did the Orphan Annie dress.
Yeah,
the first four times I bet it's fucking hilarious. After 20, you start going, it's a bit I do, and quite honestly, I wish that it, you know,
and it would be impossible for me to tour too. Like you know, I had keyboards and I would need a sound guy because
it's not
impossible.
It's not impossible, and it's even more interesting if. Like I always wonder why like someone like Comedy Central just doesn't come up with the Brendan Walsh project where you just do what
we've had like three or four deals that have fallen through with that shit.
But there's so many like your level of fucking with people is beyond what anyone like I to the point where even I get confused.
Did you look at Twitter this weekend?
Yes. I read it.
That
to
turned
my
into
fucking,
my full-time fucking job.
I read it to my crew in Jamaica. We're sitting in Jamaica, and I'm reading your Twitter feed of like, guys, I said some really rough things
all
about fucking Romeo and Juliet. Or Hansel and Gretel.
Well, and that's what I love about that shit is because I'm sitting there.
For anyone who doesn't know, this is maybe my favorite trolling I've ever seen ever. So you just made like... Three, I don't even know.
Innocuous.
I tried to figure out innocuous jokes. Jack Reacher? Great. I'm going to Jack Reacher for the remote and throw it at the TV.
Exactly. And it was like, what was the one? The Last Stand. I was starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I just wrote The Last Stand. But what about the first and middle stands leading up to the last one?
Yeah.
Tell us. No, or everybody's dying not to know. So it was like a David Spade-ish, like Hollywood Minute kind of roasting. Because this is how it all started. I don't know. I don't plan on this stuff. Like, I was bored. And I was kind of pissed. Like, I, you know, because the not drinking does get challenging sometimes.
Oh, don't
and,
tell
And I was just in a shitty mood and was like, you know what? I'm going to go to the fucking, like... the Americana Mall. They got an 18 screen theater. I'm going to see what's playing. I'm going to like maybe go see two or three movies. Like sneak, go see a movie, sneak into another one. Because it was one of those days when I was
you're
like
40,
dude. Like, you know me, Neil Mahoney, director guy. He fucking one night I was doing a show. There was a really cute girl there, and like I'm half joking with him, but I'm like, hey, fucking go tell that girl I like her or whatever, and just kept making jokes about like I don't know, like tell her. He's like, Joe, go, like, talk to that girl.
Yeah.
And, like, Neil's like, he's like, you're fucking, like, 40. Yeah. Like, just talk to her. Like, what the fuck is it?
But it's you get a license to be a fucking child when you're a comic. And you get to fucking play ridiculous games that make only you laugh. It's like my What Will the Maid Think installations that
dude,
I did.
I love that shit.
Like, I fucking get excited and I go, and I sit in a room and I'm in my underwear and I'm making, I'm in Jamaica trying to make a big joint with smoke coming out of it. I'm like, I'm fucking 40.
Yeah,
I have two children that depend on me and I am not doing anything today.
Though.
So wait.
So I was going to go to the movies and I, and yeah, sneak
out. Mind you, by the way, everyone, this was maybe the the biggest thing to go down on Twitter this weekend.
That's at the meeting that I had today. It was just most of us talking about that. I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I don't plan on doing this shit. Like, I wanted to see movies.
It's inspiration.
Well, it was. You know what it is? It's not even like. I don't even know how where it comes from, but I went.
It shows
to
the fuck up.
Go, yeah. It's just it's just something that naturally, you know, it's like feeding into, like, because the responses start feeding into it. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, something's going on here.
Yeah,
because this is the whole way it started. Was I want to go have a movie? I'm going to eat a pot cookie, go see a movie, maybe sneak into another one, maybe even sneak into a third one. Like, it was one of those days where I'm like, I'm not turning my phone on. I want to sit in a dark room and just see some movies. And I look, every fucking movie that's playing is shit. I'm like, I don't even remotely want to see any of these motherfucking movies. So then I just go on Twitter and I start listing them, because then I go on Rotten Tomatoes and look at their ratings, and they're all like, Hansel and Gretel, 17%. Some other one, 23%.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then I start tweeting these things, and I look, I looked at Hansel and Gretel's IMDb and saw Will Ferrell's one of the producers of Hansel and Gretel.
Really?
And Adam McKay. I don't know. It must be something with a production company. But then I was thinking, like, I was like, and I didn't say anything bad, but I was like, oh, wow, Will Ferrell. I mean, it's crazy. You never know who's involved with this stuff. And I have the IMDb page up, and I see the director's name, and he's got like a, he's like a Norwegian guy or something. And so I'm like, oh, that's a funny name. I was like, oh, I'm just going to tell him that the guy from Hansel and Gretel called me to yell at me for tweeting about his movie. So then I do this whole backpedal, like 20 pages of apology.
That was the best. There were 9 of them. Which made me so excited. I've never hit a tweet and started scrolling quicker to get to the first one. Where does it start? We were sitting eating breakfast in Jamaica, the whole crew, and I went, what happened is I accidentally somehow signed up for Time Segura's. Every time he tweets, it hits my phone.
Okay.
Fucking, it's the dumbest. It's great.
How did that happen?
I have no fucking clue, and I can't turn it off. So every time he fucking tweets, it comes up. Anything.
Oh, you should have told me that.
You ready for this? Watch this. I guarantee you, I have Tom Segura tweets on my phone right here.
Is that what the noises were?
God damn it. Take a look.
Is that what it is?
Fucking Tom Segura. They all come up on my fucking phone. Tom Segura.
You just got to block
Portrait
him.
Of Rogan Studio. Oh. Yeah, I should block Tom. So I go and I see Tom's is like, not cool.
Yeah,
broke comedian code.
Yeah.
And I only know this because that one time I sent you, you said, hey, ladies, send me some pictures of your boobs. And I read it and thought it said boots. And I went, that's odd. And so I took a picture of my boots and then sent it. And as I sent it, I went, oh, it said boobs. And I was like, ah, fuck it. I sent it anyway, right? Yeah. So I send it. And then you were like, fucking lay off Kreischer. And I was like, oh, that is the greatest feeling in the world. Because I know you're joking. Mm-hmm. You know, but no one else does.
It's the best.
And,
and when you can find somebody who knows how to play along.
Yes.
It's just the giddiest, like,
oh, my God. Can I tell you what I almost tweeted?
What?
I was sitting on the toilet taking a shit as I caught it, right? I caught it all because I'm working out and it's going ding, 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 ding. Because everything's coming up Segura. And I read it and I was like, and I was going to write, WTF dot 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 just got a text from Robin Williams about unfollowing Brendan Walsh. What's going on in the States? But then I was like, that's too far. Like,
It is a very nuanced thing, and
it,
I actually
gotta be good at it.
I fucking went ape shit on a guy on it's another comic. Actually, we'll talk about it off the thing because I still have to do
damage control.
I stand by everything I said to him, but it was the most uncouth. I have a reputation with some people here and there where I do just fucking, I can only be pushed so far if somebody's fucking doing something stupid, and then like I'll explode at them.
Really?
And say shit that I can't.
Is there
take
any
back.
Way you can kind of hint to what you're talking about?
Don't
say anything you don't want to say. But
yeah,
like,
I don't, because I don't want to feed into any other fucking speculations
that's the
worst about
of
other
the real
things.
Drama you actually get into through Twitter.
Well, people love drama, which is a thing on with this Twitter. That's why with the Hansel and Gretel thing, like, the people like said, I'm still today. Like, there's probably tweets in my phone of like, hey, man, like, you know, we're all with you. What's go? Like, you know, hang in there. And it's like, dude, fucking just scroll down. It's an absurd thing. Like, there's no way this is real. But if you're going to buy into the fact that, like, my agents dropped me.
That was my favorite. And I'm blacklisted. That was my fucking favorite. That was my favorite.
Just a tweet.
God, I'm having a really bad day. Just got dropped by my agent.
It just said that just one tweet. My agents dropped me.
Yeah, I fucking love that. It was such a great.
That consumed, like, number one, I'm supposed to be working on a couple things, which is if you walk into my apartment and it's immaculate, the first question out of your mouth should be like, what should you be writing now? Because I start doing.
Why can't
I just love fucking off? Whatever I'm supposed to be doing, I'm not doing that.
Why can't agents and managers and my publisher, who I love, is fucking like losing his mind?
Are you supposed to be writing a book?
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah. And it's like, that's what this meeting about today was, so I could get yelled at.
Why can't they appreciate that we're extending our reach?
And I'm like, what am I, the first comedian who fucking missed a deadline? No, I haven't written a word for it. What are you going to do?
What the fuck? Like, I got it today, and I was like, and I got the call today, and they were like, you know, this is like, we are at crunch time. Like, do you want to extend your book by another year? And I was like, no. And they're like, well, you need – and I was like, hold on. Am I the first person really to fucking – like, but then I was like, can't you see the other shit I'm doing? Like, like there's other – like – I'm procrastinating, but I'm procrastinating in a creative way. Don't you see that?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no,
That whole thing, that Twitter thing this weekend.
That was so much fun to read.
Oh, it was so fun to do. But then that just became, it's like, I literally sat at that computer at my desk like I'm working. I felt like I was working.
Oh, you were?
But I was having fun. But it really was like, from whenever it started at like noon or 2 o'clock that afternoon until, you know, well into the evening, probably about 12 hours. I just was there tweeting and replying and you know, just fucking just kept going with the character.
It's
and then woke
like
up the next
episode.
Day. It completely is. Woke up the next day, went right to the computer before I even took a piss and, you know, and then I took a piss and was like, all right, because you don't want to get too – you don't want to beat a dead horse or like get too crazy and then try to – either way, just the whole – like the whole – that's – I love that shit where it just happens organically. Yeah. And in this town, they just – they just want to fucking co-opt that.
They saw lightning in a bottle and they want to recreate it.
Monetize it. And it's impossible. It's like, you know, it's it does bug me that I have this reputation as a prankster, because it's like, yeah, I did a couple things. It's not like I'm knocking on people's door and running away all day. I'm not fucking sending people to piles of dog shit.
What it is it's
I did that Whole Foods thing, it's the crowning jewel of anything I've ever done. But the fact it's nice that people are into it, and it's like I achieved my goals and everybody loved it. It got me some attention, and I don't do any of this for attention, although that's not a bad thing in this town. But then immediately I'm having all these meetings about prank show. How can we turn this into, do these billboards, you do these other things. And I'm like, half the shit I do is illegal. You can't do it. You can't put it on TV. And the only reason I do it is because comedy, since I've been doing comedy as a profession, nothing makes me laugh anymore because I'm looking at everything with a critical eye. So I do this off the clock. And now you motherfuckers caught wind of it, and I gotta drive to Santa Monica to talk to some dumbass bitch who's a producer trying to make some fucking dumb show about like punked but like smarter. And it's like,
here's the thing: you're not like I did one thing that was my crowning jewel was me getting my ass waxed on television. it is to this day. It's the funniest thing I've ever done. I'll never beat it. But I've made a living off of it. Now, granted. If I had a nickel for every – because I did that, and then I did the Hurt Bird thing where I fucking fought a bull – or fought a bear.
Oh, yeah.
Fought a bull, swam with great white sharks, was an MMA guy, got choked out. Like, I did that. Man, I was the opposite because I had kids, and I needed to do it because I needed money. But I had a meeting for every time I thought I had a show where I just got a show. Mm-hmm. And then I got into the production room, first meeting, and they're like, so we got a guy who can get you out of the cage with great white sharks. And I was like – oh, fuck. That's all I am to these people. I mean, to the point, I swear to God when I say this, to the point where I remember getting the call for Birth Conqueror, and they were like, And I was like, what is this about? I don't, it's Travel Channel. I love Travel Channel. I can't wait to work with them. And the first fucking Skype, it was me and this guy, Dan Adler. And he's like, we got a helicopter that can get you to jump out of it. And I'm like, I remember saying no. I was like, I've got to get the fuck away from this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, but then I did Bert the Conqueror. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to keep saying yes until they fucking, until they stop bringing the offers. And
yeah.
Now I'm at the point where I'm past the guy that jumps out of the buildings.
Yeah.
A little bit, not much, yeah. But a little bit. But it's like, I know what you feel when you're like, you get stereotyped as this one thing. I was the guy, and I don't even like it. Like, yeah. I just did it, and I screamed, and that's why I got the job. But I will say genuinely, I'll say fan of, like, when I hear your stories, or when I see your pranks, or when you were tweeting to your son.
Trish and Trevor. Well, that's serious. Yeah. That stuff.
But that's so fucking, those are so fucking, like, they're so, like, when I got your tweets this weekend on the thing through Tom, I got so excited, and I was like, oh, I got something to do today.
Yeah.
Like, it's a fun thing. So you just gotta, what you gotta do is you just gotta find, you gotta become an executive producer of it, have ownership with it, and do whatever the fuck you wanna do with it. And let them, you've gotta find, you're never gonna work in this business if you don't make other people money. That's rule number one. You're never gonna fucking, you need to make other people with bad ideas money. That is how this business works.
Other people with no ideas, too.
Right.
People who have never had a creative thought in their head. You got to make them a lot of money.
But there are a huge group of dudes, myself included, that think the way you see the world when it comes to fucking with people or fucking with your friends or fucking around or just screwing off is fucking hilarious. I will say that. So, like, don't ever, like, be afraid to do that shit.
I'm not afraid. It's my lifeblood. And but somebody else pointed this out to me because I was talking to a couple other comedians about Twitter. And as you leave three comedians in a room alone now, under 10 minutes, the conversation is going to turn to Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, there's, like, you know, this one girl I know who's a comedian. This guy's harassing her. Female comedians have it so bad. I had no idea. Yeah. Like, I know guys are disgusting. But if you're a fucking woman, even remotely near the public eye, be prepared for your Facebook to get clogged with guys in their 50s asking for pictures of your feet. That's like all these girls are.
Really?
Dude, there's this thing called Wiki Feet. Foot fetishes are big.
Really?
Yeah, dude.
And here I am just finding out about puffy nipples.
No. Move on to the fucking feet when you get bored with that. Anyway, whatever. I like a girl with pretty feet. You know,
if
you
paint
your toenails.
Twitter thread. Jen Kirkman.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine what. I wouldn't even check my app.
It's it's tough. Like there, but with Twitter, like this was the topic with me and these other two comics. One was a girl, and one was a guy. And
who's the guy doing? Can you tell me?
I don't want to get into that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And
keep going. I won't say anything.
So the point was, like, because I've been thinking about it with Twitter, like, you get these at replies. Like, there are people, like, as soon as you tweet something, before it's even said, faved and then replied to by people, which is great. I love it that people are following me that closely. But then there's some fucking assholes who, like, you know, you go, you do something really funny, and then you get these replies of people who just don't get it and fucking, or they're just like, you know, oh, yeah, well, why don't you take a plunger and stick it up your ass, Walsh, LOL, Diarrhea Army, or whatever. And
Diarrhea.
It's just like, or I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just like dumb shit, people trying to play along. And then that bums me. Or like you, like me and a friend of mine are fucking around on Twitter, and then people start chiming in, you're like, and then it ruins the joke. It's like,
yeah. That happened with me and you, is that I saw people be like, attack you, and I wanted to go, hey, man,
I'm fine with that. For a future reference, I'm fine. Like, whatever people, like,
you seem to be fucking.
If we're having fun doing it, I don't care if people say shit. Like, and that's, I'll send people direct messages, like, are you cool with it? Like, because I don't, that's not my goal, is to have, like, you know, especially with our associations, you know, like with Rogan or Stanhope.
Yeah.
Fucking God bless the fans, but some of them are the fucking ninth level meathead fucking retard shit bags. And it's like, great, keep coming to shows, you're not disruptive, whatever, but you guys are fucking retarded assholes who are just looking for a fight. They're just like sitting there in their basement on every message board waiting for somebody to say the wrong thing to pile on. And like, and so like, I'll be joking around with a friend of mine, like, you know, like Chelsea Peretti or Moshe or whatever, just one of my comedian friends,
that where maybe isn't playfully, necessarily in that click.
Well, we're just playing around on Twitter, like going back and forth, insulting each other or whatever. And then people try to chime in and then they say something fucking shitty about one of my friends or they start shitting on. And then it's just like, you know, then you and your friend are like, well, guess that's over. Thanks for killing our bit, you fucking dumb asshole.
Yeah, or it's like, God forbid. I mean, I know for a fact that like a negative comment rings so much heavier than a positive comment.
It's not even the negative comment. Like, it's not that I feel bad if somebody says like, hey, you're fat and you're not funny or whatever. It's like, fine. Yeah, I know that already. Yeah. But it's just when like, when people, and this is why I exploded at this guy this weekend, because the privately I exploded at him. Because these things, when I'm doing these, bring me fucking joy. Like that, it's joy. It's pure, unbridled joy.
Yeah.
Which I never feel. Even if I'm banging a fucking never been touched 18-year-old supermodel on the road, which never happens. But
yeah.
No, but even like, you know, there's the feeling of excitement and joy that I get when like me and a friend of mine are playing around or something like what I was doing this weekend. It's just, it never happens, and it's indescribable. And when somebody fucking throws a monkey wrench into that, I mean, it fucking makes me go bananas. Because then it's like, you know, you just stole my fucking joy. Like, and I get fucking so angry. And this is what we were talking about with the Twitter, where it's like, not just people shitting on you, but people who just don't get it, or people who chime in on every joke, and it's a bummer. And it's like, is it worth it? Like, yeah, Twitter's a great fucking tool. Like, Rob Delaney wouldn't be getting booked on an open mic if it weren't for Twitter. We love Rob. No, but I mean, Rob's a funny comedian. He always was.
I follow him and he's funny.
But his career is fucking Twitter related 100%. Like, he wouldn't be selling out the shows that he's doing. And that's nothing against Rob and his.
Oh, you like that's where my brain goes? He's selling out?
Oh, Delaney's fucking killing it on the road.
I don't even want to get into it.
No, Rob's a funny guy.
I'm sure he's hilarious. I just
funny guy. Repeat customers.
The last thing I need to know is the last thing I need in my crawl is what's Rob Delaney up to these days.
But the thing is that Twitter is a great tool for us, you know. But is it worth the fact that like I could name probably five Twitter handles of people who I hate that I've never met? So is it worth having that shit in your head just that I can get the word out that much easier about my shows? The fact that I know that like this guy, like I even know what they're going to tweet when I put a tweet out. And it's like, well, you can't block them. They're a fan. But they're a fucking dumb asshole who doesn't get it. And they ruined my fucking day. And is it worth having, like, where's the balance? Is it like clogging my brain with stupid assholes' names who I don't like on Twitter? Like, is it, should we just get rid of it? Is it?
I'll tell you what, I only say this because recently I was out of the country for 14 days and I couldn't use Twitter except for when I was at the hotel.
Yeah.
When I was at the hotel, my phone
was. That's
when
I'm in Canada. It's fucking, I don't use my data in Canada because it's expensive.
I just use it when I get to the hotel, it just Wi-Fi's it and it starts loading it up.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the two things that happens in that moment is, well, number one, I don't get any of the at replies because my phone just doesn't work that way. Yeah. Like I don't read any of the negative things. Yeah. I just get the last five that were sent.
Right.
And the other thing is I don't look at my phone all day. And it clearly, definitely, distinctly swings my serotonin in the right direction.
Yeah.
Like I know for a fact I'm not thinking about my phone. So when you were talking about the joy it brings you when you get in those moments, like the joy when you tweet a funny joke or you get into a funny, like when we were, I can tell you what bar I was sitting at when I tweeted this picture of my boots.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember excited to look at what your reply was. And then when I got your reply, I'd fucking like my heart would race.
Oh, dude,
and I'd go, I think of my reply. Like I remember my reply, one of your replies was like, you're like, we're going to handle this when you get back. And I was like, well, just tell me the store you're PAing at or the store you're temping at and I'll stop by. And I got excited. I remember I called Segura. I was like, but like those moments that bring you pure joy. It's like those random times.
Well, not to cut you off, but that was to finish the thought with the, like with the negative shit, or just, you know, with the people that don't get it and that fucking bum you out.
Oh, read Colin Quinn's timeline.
Oh, dude, I love it. And that's
Colin
essentially
Quinn
what I was doing this weekend.
Is the definitive. I wonder. He has defined making Americans lose their fucking mind.
He's just king. He's the king of trolling on Twitter.
I mean, he took it to a level that I could never
well,
defend.
Well, and that's why I think
say what you want to say, but this is he was brave.
Yeah.
He clearly just like takes his glasses off and goes, I won't be reading these for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but that's what I think that might feed into. I mean, I've always liked doing that shit. Like, you know, fucking with people. I wrote a whole book of letters to companies when I had a temp job in Austin just to fuck with people because it makes me happy. But to balance it out, like, with those, like, the Colin Quinn type trolls and, like, what happened this weekend where you're just confusing people and fucking with people hard. And some people, like, I have a fucking heart, you know? Like, some people are tweeting to me where they're obviously really concerned, but I'm not going to tip my hat to them because they're going to fuck up the joke.
Yeah.
And you know what? Fuck you. Because you motherfuckers ruin my goddamn day so often. This is a pain. Like, fuck you. I'm doing what I want to do.
Yeah.
And, like, hey, you're a nice lady. I'm glad that you're worried about my mental well-being.
I can't wait till we get off this podcast and I get to tell you secrets.
Oh, yeah.
I'm dying to fucking talk about all the secrets right now. And I hate that right now people are like, just talk about it on the podcast, Bert. That's what these things are about. No, it's not.
Dude, everything's not public. Just because there's fucking podcasts.
There's a lot of non-public shit.
Yeah, man, we can't fucking air everything out. Well, we have to have things for ourselves because once you get in this business, you're selling yourself as a commodity, number one. And then every little aspect, anytime you get any attention, and I love my managers and I love my agents. I don't know my agents as well, but I'm with a great agency and they are fucking great people. And, my managers are awesome. I think I feel like, you know, it's like a little family over there. But this industry, once you do something that gets people's attention slightly, like the Whole Foods thing or a Twitter thing, like, okay, you know, like I'm surprised that I didn't get fucking a call this weekend from someone going, hey, we got a – there's a – TBS is doing a Twitter-based reality show. I can't think of a good example, but where it's like, but like the Whole Foods thing, where it's like a one-time thing. You can't do that on TV. And the amount of meetings that I went to for prank shows and stuff was unbelievable. And it's just because like people, like the industry side of this business is just like, oh, what he did something. People paid attention. Glup, 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 glup. Okay, let's get – yeah, there's a way to make a buck off it. It's like, fuck you. This is for me. Like, we have to have stuff for ourselves. And, like, every little – like, no matter who the most – like, Louis C.K. or Doug Stanhope. Like, yeah, they're fucking the most honest guys on stage. Bill Burr. You need to have your own shit. Everything's not a fucking show for you. Like, we're not this special breed of people that are put on this planet to
fucking... you're not a machine. Like, you're not like...
Whoa. Whoa. Stop the clock.
I like...
You're the machine.
I'm the machine. I'm the machine. I am the machine. You have no idea how weird that is when you're with your kids at a fucking mall and you hear two dudes.
Actually, I do know how weird it is for me to be at a mall with your kids. It's fucking weird as fuck. Remember that time you said to cops?
These dudes yelled, "The machine!"
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And they're like, "Jaeger shots!" And we're walking by a Dave & Buster's and I'm like, yeah. And they're like, "Right now!" And then my ego, my head goes... Can't let down these fans.
I mean, yeah.
If I had a moment with whatever guy I fucking thought was cool, fuck, I gotta. And then my kids are like, "Oh, then we're gonna do the Ferris wheel." And I was like,
"Nope, kids, Jaeger shot.
I can always do the Ferris wheel with the Jaeger shot in them." So, that's my yin and yang, my push and pull. The thing I was gonna say is that the What Will the Maid Think I started doing, and then got really big, like I can't even express how big it got. It got really big in the Netherlands, in Finland, Iceland, Amsterdam, that area.
Yeah,
really big over there, and it exploded. And I started getting offers for a book deal. And what was it? What Will the Maid Think?
Got real big in the Netherlands.
It got huge.
Well, it should. I mean, it's brilliant.
It. Well, thank you. But
the shit you can do with fucking towels and clothes. I don't know how you pack on the road, but it's like I'm going to Nashville this weekend. this is, I'm not going to wear it on a plane, but this all that's in my suitcase.
I had a wardrobe for, because I was doing TV at the time.
Yeah.
So I had a huge thing of fucking basically
a pair of jeans and shoes.
Disposable wardrobe.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of shit you'd use and it would get muddy and you couldn't use the next one. They'd just throw them away.
Yeah.
So I was fucking with these hotel rooms and I was doing it. Originally, I did it for my crew. The first one I did was some spoon and some, you know, and like I just did it. And then I did another one, and then I was doing it for my crew, and I was taking pictures with my cameras and showing them when we got to the car. Mm-hmm. And it was Twitter when Twitter started blowing up, and I started posting them on Twitter. And then I posted like maybe like 10, and then Adam Richman and I, the guy from Man vs. Food, mm-hmm. we started doing them back and forth. He would do one, and I would do one.
Oh, okay.
And then like I maybe had like 20 of them, and I got – and then it blew up in the Netherlands. Or whatever. Scandinavia. Okay. They blew up in Scandinavia. And they were like, we want to do a book deal. And I was like, that would be fucking great.
Just the pictures of the...
Just the pictures.
That's such a great...
And then...
And so this is your book deal that you're procrastinating on?
No.
Okay. Because that's... I'll let you finish.
So I then... They get the offer and we have a conference call with my... I forget. I want to say it was my agent then. Not my book agent now, but my agent then. Or maybe I talked to my book agent now or another book agent at the same agency. And they were like, this is great. We really love this. And like the Today Show got it and Good Morning America talked about it. It got really, really big. And they were like, you know, we just need like 60. If you could do like 60 more. And I was like, no. Like these are done, like in a weird way, I was like,
it's inspiration.
It's inspiration. I can't tell you when inspiration shows up. Like if you want, I'll get an eight ball and go sit in a hotel room and see what happens. But
yeah.
But if they just show up. Like I can't tell you where they come from. Yeah. But from that, I then got the book deal because I got introduced to my now book agent, and then the Machine Story got very popular.
Oh, okay. So and you're doing like a straight up book. Like you got to sit there and write
stories like the Machine Story and Flying.
That's a fucking tall order, man.
You're telling me.
Get some discipline. 40,000
words as of today.
That's how many you've written?
Yeah, I just.
What does that equal?
Like 140 pages.
That's good, man. You're okay.
140 double spaced. Size 12 in Cambria. Size
12. Go 15, motherfucker. I sent it shit in 15.
Did you notice if I sent it in at 14? I sent the titles of each chapter on it. And fucking Yaniv's going to lose his mind.
Very, 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 very hot that day.
Yaniv is he's the only guy that I met when we pitched books that said, that didn't say, you need a podcast. Yeah. Everyone, you go in to pitch a book and they'd be like, do you have a podcast? And I was like, no. And they're like, well, they're very successful with selling books. Adam Carolla sold. And I went, no, he Adam sold Carolla's them because he's fucking Adam Carolla.
Yeah.
Not because he has a podcast. Yeah. Let me tell you something. Patrick Melton has a podcast.
Name one thing Carolla did before his podcast.
Yeah.
See, you can't. that's the crazy thing, too, with like, fucking off. Like that is what I like to do. Like I think there's not a specific thing I like to do, like comedy or painting or music or whatever. It's like whatever I'm not supposed to be doing, that's what I like to do.
What you need, here's what you should do. You should just get like say $125,000 per episode, and you get to do whatever you want with $125,000. And you have to know that your next, and you get to keep like a percentage, but your next $125,000 is dependent. I only say that people are like, why that much? It's how much it costs.
That's how much it costs to make shit.
Yeah. So, and then your next project is dependent. It should be like the Chappelle Show, but just whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do, because I think that whatever you'll come up with. And I only say this as someone that has known of you for fucking 10 years. Yeah. It's going to be fucking interesting.
Yeah.
I'm dying to talk about fucking.
No, working, like, you know, there are things in the work. I am confident that.
Do you think you'll be famous?
You know what? Like, fame, I don't know about, like, what is that? You know, like, people stopping me for pictures in the airport.
No, this is my definition of fame. Noticing that you're getting recognized walking around the grocery store.
Yeah, I mean. I don't, you know what, at this point.
Two questions. Do you want that? And do you, and be honest, don't just go, I mean, don't just go no because that's pretty much what
that's
everyone
like the
wants
modest
to.
Thing.
Yeah. Do you want that? And do you want, and do you think it is still achievable?
Oh, it's definitely achievable.
Yes.
I mean, that's like without a question.
Like, but do you see that as like something that you go, I think that's
well, but
happen.
That's not a motivating goal. You know, like if that's one of your goals, like if you're like, I just want to walk into a club and everybody know who the fuck I am. Yeah. Well, what do you want to be famous for? I don't care. Whatever. You know?
It's a motivating goal in the sense that the once the second. Yeah, I guess I see what you're saying.
You know,
I
where it's like, I don't fame's want to be famous. Not a goal, but like, of course, it's a necessary byproduct. Like, you can't be a successful stand-up comedian and be anonymous. You know what I mean? So I guess, to a certain extent, of course, like, you know, I would like to get to a point where, you know, if I could just sell out a 500-seat theater in 30 cities, 35 cities.
That's fucking, you're going to be, by the way, you'll be very famous.
Yeah.
Well, well, I don't know, maybe. But Bill,
no, that's
Bill
not
Burbine
even a huge,
that.
Like, you know, Bill does bigger places now. But that's like about Paul F. Tompkins size fame, maybe.
Paul F. Tompkins does that?
I mean, well, he started Tompkins 300. Do you hate him?
No, I don't hate him, but we hate each other.
Yeah.
So I have to hate him because I know he hates me.
Oh, really? I don't know that.
It was fucking so long ago. He definitely doesn't remember it. I'm sure.
Oh, really?
Although, back in his drinking days? He doesn't drink anymore?
He's not. I don't know what his deal. I think.
Doesn't matter.
I think I'll have a glass of wine every day, but it's not. Yeah. He's not smoking, drinking, Paul. Like he used to be.
It was definitely during his drinking days, and we just had a run in where he just didn't want me on a show for whatever reason. It was awkward, and it defined my relationship.
Like a stand up show?
Yeah.
Just like a Largo kind of thing.
No, improv. And they put me on because they were not. I don't know. It was a long story.
He was just like, I don't want that man on my show.
No, actually. He was. I hate talking about it because I know it's going to start drama, but I hope it doesn't. I hope everyone just hears this as a story that happened like fucking 7 years ago and realizes that that's what that was.
Yeah.
Or maybe now 5 years ago. I was put on the show and he was so cool, man. And I liked his stand up. I really respected him. And I just seen his half hour on Comedy Central. Mm-hmm. And I had previously seen that one man show he did on HBO.
Oh, the Dream
and
the
Dream. I thought was fucking awesome. Yeah. And I was like so pumped to be on a show with him. And Jen Kirkman, Howard Kramer, Eddie Pepitone, all people I respected. Yeah. And I watched and I was in awe. I was like, I was a young comic and I was so excited.
Yeah.
And I watched the whole thing and I did my set, which is obviously very different than what they do. And I got done and they were all cool to me. Like, I mean, to this day, if I see Howard Kramer, I hang out with him.
Howard's a good dude. I mean, everybody's cool.
And Eddie Pepitone, too. I hung out and I drank with him. We had a great time. Mm-hmm. And then I got there the next day, and Paul had marked my name off the list in a magic marker, like he didn't want me on the show. And then they put up a new list because he had done that, and he did it again, and then kind of got in my face.
He got in your face?
Yeah. He got in my face and was like, do you need money or something? And I was like, all right. And so I wrote him off in my head. I still have written him off pretty much. I mean, I like not that.
What do you mean, do you need money or something?
Yeah, like, that's what he said. Do you need money or something? Why do you need
an improv? What, $8 at the improv?
$7, $7.50. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't.
It was just a bad
like,
fucking.
He felt that you were like forcing yourself onto the show.
Yeah,
or something?
He didn't realize that the club that Aaron had put me on the show because she didn't feel like the lineup was strong.
Well, they always do that.
Yeah,
they do the improv when you have your own night there. They give you could pick like three people and they throw two other people on the show whether you like it or not.
And he was very condescending and very rude to me. And I was extremely hurt. Mm. Like I was because I had hung out with him the night before. Like if he had just blown me off the night before, I would have seen it coming. But
he was
out.
Hanging out jovial,
having drinks, talking. Yeah. We were talking about comedy. I was talking about how great his half hour was. And like Jen Kirkman, to her defense, not that. Me and her had a falling out because of this also, because I told this story and I guess I didn't paint it the right way for me to be friends with her, but we're totally fine now. But I will definitely say that this is so long ago. The fact that I'm bringing it up is pathetic, but
no, it's not pathetic. I'm the one that brought it because I'm
no. So yeah. So my, I
Paul's from
about
Philly
it.
Too.
Yeah, I know. Which, I can't imagine him coming from Philly. But man, the crazy thing is, like, all Philly comics massively respect him. Dudes that do not do what he does think he's fucking the tits. But it was just one thing in comedy, and
well, that's a shitty thing, you know. I mean, obviously
he does not remember it this way. He remembers himself being very generous, and he. I can promise you he wasn't. He was like, do you need money or something? Like, why do you need these sets? Are you practicing for something? And I was like, no, they called me and asked me to the show. And he's like, well, you're not on it. Okay. I was told one thing and then they put your name on there and I'm just telling you, you're not what I asked for and you're not on it. And I went, okay. And he goes, all right. Like he was trying, you could tell him, you could see him trying to like at the end kind of spin it like, so we're cool. Right. But he was such a dick
oh,
that
wow.
I walked away and I, The worst part is my parents were in town that weekend, and I had given up hanging out with my parents and going out to dinner with them that night to go do this set because I was excited to fucking hang out with this dickhead. It's because I was like, I hung out with them last night. I was like, Mom and Dad, I can't. You guys go out to dinner with my kids and my wife. I'm going to go work. And I was, like, I'll get to hang out with Paul F. Tompkins again because I looked up to him, and he was a fucking douche up and down. And I was like, and I still kind of, I saw him in Anchorman the other day, and I was like, funny part, but I can't laugh because I just.
No, once somebody fucking shits on you like that, then it's. It's tough, man. Like, yeah, because it does. It hurts.
It hurts.
Than anything.
It's like
you're
your feelings
like,
are.
Wow.
Stanhope shit on me one time, like so fucking aggressively. And I was in the room and I heard him doing it. And I don't know if he knew I was in the room or not, but I think he knew I was in the room. That's why he was doing it. And it was funny, and the room was falling apart, and he was talking about just young guys who show up out of nowhere and don't have any chops, can't do stand up, and and he was, but he was drinking, and I was like, whatever, and then I saw him after the show, and he acknowledged that I was there, but he acknowledged it in a way that he knew I was there before.
Oh yeah,
like so I almost was like, he's a stand up, he's allowed to do that. If I'm going to be a stand up, I have to do that. And then randomly one night, I sent him a fucking email. Fucking after all this money that I had made or success I had accrued or whatever, I was just a road comic in Sacramento, and I sent him an email saying I was in a bad spot, and he replied back like a fucking friend, like, man, it's called the quickening, let it happen.
Yeah,
just the less you care, the more fun it is.
Yeah,
like, and it was, and I've since then I've established somewhat of a friendship with I can go back and forth with him, and but it's like, you know, I have tough skin. That's what my point was at. I have tough skin. You can make fun of me. You can shit on me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can fucking, and you know, obviously when I respect you, you get even that much more leeway.
Yeah.
But that thing with Paul Tompkins was fucking.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate, but it happens.
It doesn't though, really. I mean, yeah, well, you know what I mean? Like how often have you seen shit like that go down?
That's the only time it's ever happened to me.
But I mean, how many times have you seen someone do that to someone else? In what have you been doing comedy 15 years or something?
Yeah, 15.
Now? So
14, 15.
Maybe that incident. What? Maybe twice. You saw.
I hope it. I guess it just defines your opinion of those people, and that's where you keep your friends close. I mean, I know that. Yeah. I mean, I think my circle's got.
Well, I don't know
better.
If you saw how many people turned their back on me this weekend on Twitter.
Really? Seriously?
Yeah, Marin. Fucking
what?
No, it's the Twitter thing we were talking about.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Rob Delaney.
What I just got trolled in my own fucking man cave. Oh, so wait, now do you still hang out with Stanhope?
No, we don't hang out. I mean, we'll shoot the breeze on the phone.
He's always gone though. You're always on your own fucking thing.
We kind of had when I moved out here.
You don't have to talk about
almost
this
4 years ago. Oh no, no, it's okay, fine. No, yeah, we're totally cool. Oh, yeah, I mean, I was like, you know, he has a big Super Bowl party every year. He invited me. I was going to go, but I didn't work much this month. And, you know, with the laying off the sauce, it's like, there's no way I'm not going to fucking drink if I'm out in the middle of the desert with a bunch of nuts. Watching a game I don't give a fuck about. we'll talk on the phone and stuff. And I went and saw him at the Comedy Store, and he made me go do a set before him.
Yeah.
We're still buddies, but it definitely has, like, I mean, it hasn't changed, actually. But when I was moving out here 4 years ago, or was it four? 2009. It's not even 4 years. It feels like I've been here forever.
You haven't even been out here 4 years?
No.
Gosh, March 1st. It does 1st. Seem like you. I feel like you've been out here 10.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like
I've
you've been around
10 years,
for a
like the presidency. But he, on the way out here, I stayed at his place because I drove from Austin, and his is like, it's kind of halfway between here and Austin, and went there to watch the Super Bowl, actually. It was early February when I started driving out, and he was like, oh, come watch the Super Bowl and hang out for a while on your way to L.A. And then I still didn't have a place to live in L.A. I was going to stay on Tig's couch and... you know, just try and figure something out. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to go on the road whatever. He was leaving in a few days, and he was having this thing built on his property, like this, like something like this. And, and he's like, this is fucking costing me a fortune. He's like, would you mind staying here for a couple weeks and taking care of the dogs and helping with that thing and let me know if I'm getting ripped off. Because he knows I used to be a car. I built a couple of houses and stuff with my friends. And, I used to be a carpenter for a while. So I know what I'm doing. And he's like, stick around. Keep an eye. You know, let me know what you think of what's going on here. Take care of the dogs. You know, whatever. I'll give you, like, left $1,000 for me or something. And then when he came back, we were, like, hanging out and drinking and shit. And I was going to tell him... It was just a beautiful moment because we're in his kitchen sitting at the table across from each other, and it's like something I've been wanting to bring up to him, but like felt fucking stupid. And he, it's the same time I was just like, yeah, you know, with the whole LA thing. And he's like, yeah, you know, I wanted to talk to you, like Hennigan's his manager.
Yeah.
He takes care of everything. He's like, you know, I'm going to be all these dates that we're doing. I'm just going to use local guys at all the gigs because they'll help promote. And it's like, you know, it really, Doug taking guys on the road with him cost him a fortune.
It,
like,
cost everyone a
fucking fortune. Fucking like picks up every tab, and you know, he's a real generous guy, but Doug's not making Rogan money or fucking anywhere near a successful comic salary. No, he's doing well now, but still, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, Tosh wrote, like, I mean, they're,
yeah, no,
Doug's,
he's
not selling out theaters,
but he still has that cover that he's got to meet where he's like, I'm paying for your
meals.
Well,
it's like, it's it, when his manager's like, listen, you can't spend $70,000 a year on openers anymore, you know, like, because, you know, it adds up. Hotel rooms, bar tabs, lunches, fucking, and he always picks, you know, fucking losers to go on the road with him, so he's got to lend them $100 every now and then. And so he's like, yeah, we're going to use local guys. And I'm just like, thank God. Like, I was going to say the same thing. Like, I was just going to be like, man, I love you. I love going out with you. But I'm moving to L.A. I kind of want to be there. Like, I don't want to be one of those guys who moves to L.A. and is on the road all the time.
Yeah.
And number two, I didn't get into, like, I mean, I fucking love Doug. I think he's the best guy out there. And he's done amazing things for me off and on the clock. But ultimately, I didn't get into comedy to be somebody's opener for the rest of my life. It got to the point where the association was like, I felt like my name and his name were just synonymous, where it was just like, oh, Walsh, yeah, Stanhope. Like, or, you know, like,
well, you don't,
or people
would
even see me and be like, Stanhope, like, not mistaking me for him, but like, yeah, Stanhope, that's your part of that.
And he doesn't want that for you either.
No, of course not.
He never got into this business so that he could have minions.
No, like, he wants to hang out with, you know,
he just
guys
wants
that
to
he
hang
has
out with
fun
cool
with
people.
Yeah.
You're one of the cool people he hangs out with, and he doesn't want you to be defined by his thumb, like that.
Well, and it was a perfect, that it was like, so like, if every personal relationship was like that, like, there would be no stress in my life. Where it's just like, oh, we're on the same page. Like, you know, because I feel kind of weird. Like, how do I bring up to my friend that, like, hey, I don't know if you're going to ask me to do any of those dates, but
that's a fucking great.
I want to fucking, you know, I'm going to LA and I want to pursue, and just have him be like, yeah, you're not coming on the road.
It's
true. You outgrow it too. Like, I mean, you know, there's other guys. This guy, Junior Stopka, that he's got out with him now is fucking hilarious.
I heard him talking about him on Rogan's podcast.
Yeah.
I tried to look him up, but I was like, I was in a weird place where it was just phones.
Probably not much about him online, but
I was looking for some stand-up video.
I'm sure there's some stuff, He's a funny guy.
It seems like Doug kind of always has the, you know, stamp of approval of dudes that I get a kick out of.
Yeah, Doug likes having chaos around him all the time, too.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I think it's like, it definitely is.
I listen to him and Todd fucking Tom Rhodes' podcast on Tom Rhodes' radio once a fucking month. Because it's just them on Ambien drinking.
Oh, and they do that every month?
No, it's the exact same podcast.
Oh, you listen to
that? Because it's them, and it's just Tom clearly not listening to Doug, and Doug clearly spilling his heart. Uh-huh. At one point, Doug goes, Tom, I have no joy in life. And you hear Tom just take a sip of wine, and he goes, so what do you think of my stand-up? It ends with them singing some Ricky Lee Jones song.
Oh, yeah. I got to check that out.
Oh, it's I've tried to get people to, like, I tried to get people to listen to it one time when we did the Ice House Chronicles, and everyone just made fun of me, but it's such brilliant fucking radio because it's like, It's Doug's being very open, very candid about everything, and Tom is just hammered. And they tell these great stories back and forth. I love it. I listen to it once.
I'll check it out. I really fell off with the podcast. I never listened to them before I moved here. I'd never listened to a podcast.
That's all I listened to.
And then when I got here, pretty quickly, I mean, I wasn't here for very long, and then Aukerman called to do the Comedy Death Ray podcast.
I met that guy.
And
I met that guy at UCB and had heard that name a million times, like one of those names. And he was so nice and unassuming.
Oh, good.
That I was like, wait, if I was Scott Aukerman, I'd be a cunt. Because his name is like he's like one of the fucking top five godfathers of alternative comedy in a weird way.
But yeah, you know, a lot of that is right place, right time. Not to knock fucking Aukerman. I love Scott. He's a great guy.
I'd be such an arrogant dick if I was him.
But
only because I'd be like,
but
who
would
the
you
fuck
though?
Is this guy? Like, I don't know. But not that I'm like that anyway ever. Yeah. But I assume I look for that behavior when I go into a place.
He might be addicted to people. But either way, he's like, do you want to come in and do the podcast? Oh, yeah, great. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
And then I get in there and I realize like it was like me and Kindler, Jerry Minor, I think. And so obviously those guys had done a million things together. Mm-hmm. And I had never heard the podcast and there were kind of like recurring things. And then I realized into it, I was like, the fuck? I don't know what they're talking about. Like I felt like an idiot. So I was like, all right, from now on, like before you go do a podcast, go listen to a couple.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to spend that much time, but.
I did that when I did Doug Loved Movies for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I had listened to it, but I hadn't like listened and paid attention to the bits. I just listened to guys I liked hearing on it and they did whatever the fuck they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then I listened to one and I was like, oh wait, he plays games and shit.
Yeah.
And I had to learn the games and then I went on and I literally might've been his two worst appearances he's ever had. Cause I'm just, it's
well, he
me.
Never said anything about it. I've talked to, well, he's told me a couple of them that I went and checked out. But either way, the point was like I went down this podcast rabbit hole for a while.
Really?
Just where I was like, I was like, you know, kind of. I started listening to the one I was just talking about, Aukerman's thing every now and then, and then Trussell's what WTF, you know, all that like all that started coming out around that same time.
Yeah.
And so that was just like, you know, every time I flew, I'm fucking, you know, depending on how long the flight is, I'll listen to fucking a million podcasts. And then somewhere like recently, I just kind of stopped. I think I got so involved in mine, not that it like consumes my life, but I feel like we go in there, have such a great time. We recorded one yesterday and we went to The Price is Right first.
Yeah, you texted me that. I just left The Price is Right, and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I thought maybe you'd see, because I was tweeting pictures of us, too. We went to the dollar store and bought matching outfits, and fucking me and three other guys, me and Randy Lidke, the other guy on the Bone Zone, Johnny Pemberton, who's he's a comedian. You know Johnny?
I know.
He looks
like
very young.
Yeah,
he's in 21 Jump Street. Did you see 21 Jump Street, the movie?
Yeah, I did.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
I thought it took me.
Oh,
I was
one of the funniest
away.
Fucking movies. When they say, "Don't fucking worry about that," and they sit down in the fucking principal's office, and he goes, "So which one of you guys is Johnny?" And they look at each other, and they're like, "Oh, we never learned our name." Yeah. I laughed so hard that my wife had to hit me to stop laughing because my laugh was overwhelming the rooms, and no one could hear the next fucking. And I could not. I didn't pitch you for a
job. It
jock.
Just was like so because I had heard about. You know how funny the movie was, and
oh,
I'm like, ah,
fucking,
I'm sure it's
wait,
funny for what it
movie?
Is. Johnny, he plays one of the high school kid, the main high school kid,
the drug dealer.
He's just like a blonde. I don't remember. No, there's like a group of like three
there's
of them.
Three? Is he
he's
one
like
of the
ringleader? No, he's not a gay guy. He's got.
I've
got oh, you know, I'll show you a picture of him right now.
Oh, I'll tell you exactly.
In his Price is Right outfit.
Yeah, that movie was fucking awesome.
So me and Randy and Johnny went to Price is Right. I'm friends with Drew Carey. So, you know, we get...
That would have been such a name drop if it was 1995.
Drew's a great guy. Well, he's got some guys on there, but...
Oh, I know who he is. He's one of the nerds.
Yeah.
I fucking love that guy. He was great.
That's the outfits we were wearing.
Yeah, Drew was a really sweet guy. When I started stand-up, he was doing those Thursday night improv nights. And I did one show.
We're all wearing the same outfit.
Oh, that's fucking great.
No, I'm touring with Drew.
Drew's a great guy.
That's who I'm going to Nashville with. He's great. He's so funny and so generous.
He was the nicest guy. I did when I first came out and I wasn't doing any stand up. I'd done TV and then gotten fired from everything. Mm-hmm. Not fired, but just everything got canceled. Yeah. Drew was doing Thursday night improvs and I hosted one night and then he was just like, yeah, I like the guys. Dude, let him do five every night that we do this. And he was always sweet as fuck.
He's
like,
great.
He's
super
a great,
great
guy.
So
I wasn't trying to shit on everyone that's going to blow up on Twitter. I wasn't trying to shit on Drew Carey. But
I don't
in
think
1985,
he's
that was one
over.
Hell of a name drop.
Yeah, yeah.
I ran into him at a cheeseburger place with a writer, and the writer was like, there's Drew Carey. And we fucking got nervous. And he goes, I know him. I'm going to go over and say hi. And Drew Carey rolled over and was like, hey, Mike.
Yeah.
And just a really man. Fucking nice guy.
yeah, he's great. That's – yeah, so we were – you know, so we didn't like go wait in line or anything. It was just like, you know, his assistant said.
And did
up.
You podcast out of there?
Well, we all went there and left. Randy had a friend in town. That's kind of what kicked it off. He was like, hey, yeah. Do you think you want to go to The Price? Because I've been talking about it since me and Drew have gotten to know each other. I'm like, yeah. I love The Price is Right. Genuinely, non-ironically, I've loved The Price is Right since
really?
I was 3 years old.
I mean, everyone, that's like a part
it's
of Americana
great.
In everyone's head.
And so Randy's – and I, you know, but I was thinking, oh, man, I should probably save it. I don't want to bug him and be like every week like, hey, Drew, can I come again to The Price is Right?
No,
and,
yeah.
And so I thought, ah, maybe I should save it for like a chick or something, you know. And so – but – which would have been a huge mistake because four guys dressed the same. Oh, we're going to be all over the episode too. February 20th it airs. Everybody fucking DVR The Price is Right. On your screen, on the right side of your screen, right on that aisle, there's four idiots wearing bright yellow T-shirts with black and with black collars and a black and yellow baseball cap.
Oh, that's
and we
hilarious.
Are fucking all over that show.
Oh, that's
we are all
hilarious.
Over it. And between Drew acts like he walks out and sees us and fucking just starts cracking up, and then like goes on with the show. And during the commercial breaks, he. You know, he talks to the audience and he comes over. He's like, oh, hey, yeah, Brendan, how you doing or whatever? And I'm like, oh, he's just tipping the hat that he knows me right away. I'm like, oh, wait, I'm wearing a giant name tag.
Yeah. Oh,
and it's like.
You do have the name tag still?
I'm going to auction them off on we're going to auction you. I'm off auctioning mine, Johnny's, and Randy's shirt, hat, and the shirts still have the name tags on them. We want to start video broadcasting again, live streaming our video podcast.
That's great.
And we need some equipment and shit, so when it airs, I'm going to put them
up. Where
do
you guys do yours out of?
At Randy's house now.
Okay, and then the second question, how's Drew stand up these days?
It's great. He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
He's definitely...
Is he playing to the... I'm assuming that a lot of Price is Right people are coming out to see him?
The crowds are good, you know? It's hard to tell. I mean, there's... He's not clean, so
yeah,
it's not
the,
like people
when
looking
I saw
for
him,
family.
He was aggressive.
Yeah,
he was like fucking hardcore.
He's funny,
like,
you know.
Fuck.
It's hard. I mean, he's a funny guy. He's a funny guy to the bone, you know, and like likes to have a good time. He's going to be touring. He's not a big drinker.
He used to be, right?
Priscilla. I don't know. I think you know. I think he had a reputation as a partier when he was like
to,
at the height of his
heart
success.
Attack. I think.
Did he have a heart attack?
Yeah, he had a heart attack.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's when I was doing that hosting thing. He just had like a stint put in or something.
Oh fuck! Well, yeah. I'm sure that'll calm you down. He'll have you know like we did a benefit in Aspen, like a month ago, and after the show, yeah, we had like two drinks. But no, he's not a boozer. Oh, yeah. So anyway, yeah, watch The Price is Right on the 20th. It was funny because we made up this whole story that we worked at a gas station hot dog restaurant where – don't try to figure it out. So we live in Temecula and we all came down. We all work at the gas station.
Oh, for Price is Right.
Yeah, because the outfits –
like, you and Drew?
I'm sorry. When he was talking, so, you know, because he talks to the crowd and he comes over and he starts talking to us. And I'm like, oh, we live in Temecula. We work at Revers. It's a hot dog gas station, but like we focus on the hot dogs or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny because the whole crowd, nobody knew what to make of us. Like we're fucking just, And Drew's playing along. It was so fun. It was so fun. Because then he starts like making cracks. Like he's like, "Well, where are you from?" And I like free because I don't know. I'm like, "Oh fuck, what's near?"
I haven't thought about backstory yet.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, "Oh, you know, just right outside of Temecula." And he's like,
"Oh, that's fucking."
I was like, "Oh, I grew up." He's like, "Did you grow up in Temecula?" I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Oh, where'd you grow up?" I was like, "Oh, you know, like right outside Temecula." And then he's like, "Oh, so like meth dealers or whatever. You hang out with a lot of meth dealers? You live in a meth lab or whatever?" And I was like, and I like stand up to the crowd. I'm like, "Boo, no." I was like, "I come from a good home, Drew Carey." So it was like, so we did that yesterday. And that's I thought maybe you would have seen on Twitter that I wasn't lying because it does sound stupid. No, I'm at the Price is Right.
I was like, "God, is he working at the Price is Right?"
So we just went to fuck off and had a good time and then went and did the podcast. Me and Randy and Johnny did it. And it's such a good one because we just kind of kept talking about our fake hot dog business.
You're fucking the one thing I will say about the Bone Zone is the logo is so fucking awesome.
That's these fans did them, Don and Joe. This guy Don Picton.
How many fucking fans do goddamn artwork? How come everyone? You ever feel like
that? I'm sure they listen to your shit. I'll send you. If you go to he's at Fred.
Oh, it doesn't work if I email them and go, "Hey, will you draw a logo for me?"
Yeah, well, actually, you know what? I'm going to talk to him. I think
that's
just
a badass
like
logo. I'll just say that's a badass
logo. It is a badass logo.
I always see that when I go up on Stitcher. Stitcher,
yeah, yeah.
When I go on Stitcher and I see, like, you know, all the things I listen to, it's the same family of people. And so it's always in there.
And it always says, if you like these parts, you may also like the Bone Zone. You're like, "No, thanks."
No, I fucking...
He's been banished from the Death Squad family. No more Bone Zone.
Oh, good. I was afraid this is a four-hour podcast. It's got to
be
outside.
Like, what time?
Just 2 hours.
Okay.
It's not that bad.
All right, do you post all, do you edit these or anything or no?
No, I don't edit. Yeah, unless there's something you don't want me to put in there. But the fuck did I just?
Just popped your couch.
I broke a pen. So, I don't edit them, if that's fine with you.
No, no, it's fine with us. Yeah, we have so much fun doing that podcast. So
can I come do your podcast?
Yeah.
Do you have people do it? Or is it
We don't have guests usually, but like Davey, it's usually me, Randy, and Davey. And it's basically just, you know, it's the same like the kind of joy that I get from the tweets where we, you know, we'll come up with some loose ideas like, "Oh, maybe we can talk about how like Randy got hit by a car yesterday or something." Like it's all like just fun, goofy stuff. And then we'll just start talking and things just grow and it just turns into something.
Yeah.
And it's just so much fun. And then, like, you know, now I started listening to them, like, right after, you know, we do it. Like, now that we're doing it ourselves, Randy posts them that night. Like, when we're doing it over at the Ice House, you know, Red Band's got so many it was literally taking weeks for our shit to get posted. So now I'll go home and listen to them, and it cracks me up. So I'm like, "Well, is this that funny, or is it just because I did it?"
No, I listen to my podcast. That sounds so horrible to say, but I do listen to my podcast.
Holy shit.
And like I listen to the one
bad.
I just did with Pete Correale and Sebastian Maniscalco.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Correale is so unbridled in the sense that their podcast is very produced.
Mm-hmm.
And like mine is not, obviously. Yeah. I think we just walked in and I hit record and I was like, "All right, you ready?" Like there's no... It's what I know about you, what I like. All the things I like. It just should be a regular conversation. It's the only reason I love doing this podcast is like, I don't normally get, you know, my wife has got the kids in the house. Mm-hmm. She just let the dog out, obviously, but like they're allowing me time to kind of hang out with other dudes.
Yeah.
Cause when I'm home, I gotta be like daddy on
duty. That is a great, like, this is kind of a great loophole too for, you know.
Fuck yeah. I mean, I once a week.
Because if these microphones weren't in our hands, it would be like, "Fucking tell your fat, stupid friend to go home."
She'd be out here and watch
Les Mis.
"Honey, you're leaving Sunday. The girls want to go out to fucking California." Yeah. Right now she's going, "Guys, don't." And I guarantee you the girls will fucking stroll back here in 5 minutes and just be like knocking on the window, "Dad." But it's a weird loophole. And like I open a bottle of wine, drink it by myself. I'll blame half of it on you.
Yeah, that's
fine.
I'll
be like, "Mom, this is great." And then I'll go in and I'll go, "You guys want to go out to eat?" And they'll be like, "Let's go to Johnny Rockets."
Is that where you guys are going to eat?
No, well, that's where the girls want to go. Ugh. I want to go to California.
Don't let them eat that shit.
California Pete's Kitchen.
Wow. You need to fucking get some better taste.
Jack Black goes there.
The same one.
It's Jeff. Yeah, Jeff. I see Jack Black there like fucking every time we go there.
There are no good like local places around here though. Is it just malls and
Leanne just texted me, "Dinner's ready in 5. I guess we're not going out to eat. I guess we're eating here. No, everything around here is fucking...
Text her back, "Cool, Brendan's staying." He said he's really hungry.
So funny. You were like, no kids, right? As a joke. And you came here and we were literally having a tea party for her, one of her American Girl dolls. I go, Isla, when Brendan walks in, ask him if he wants to stay for the tea party. And she was like, do I know him? And I was like, hopefully not.
Kids are fucking funny, man. Like, I see Al Madrigal's kids a lot.
Al's a pretty good fucking dad.
Yeah, he loves having it. Yeah, that's a family right there. Yeah. That's something to look at. Like,
he's a good dad, and he's like fucking like, he's a grown-up. I am not. Yeah.
He's been a grown-up, though, for a long time. He was a grown-up when I first met him.
How long have you known now?
He worked in Austin. You know, it's over 10. It's about 10 years. I mean, he's like one of the first guys.
He had a lot of great, like, he toured with Hedberg, with Chappelle. Yeah. Like, you've toured with the who's who's of people.
It is. Somebody brought it's
you, it Tom Segura, and Al Madrigal. Tom Segura, I don't know what people think like about that guy, but like, everyone wants him with him.
Really?
Yeah. And I know him. I'm his friend. Barely fucking would want to support
small
him.
Doses. Small doses.
Small doses. Definitely.
Fat guy. Small doses.
Yeah, he's toured with, like...
I'm going to tweet that to him.
The fat guy, small doses.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I remember, like, Rogan took him to Australia. Russell Peters took him to London.
Oh, wow.
He tours with fucking everybody. And I go, who the fuck is that? Like,
it's a weird... I guess it's flattering, like, you know, because I can bellyache about... Because, like, I haven't really made my night yet or, you know, I don't know. I feel like I've been spinning my wheels for a few years here and there. And
dinner's
I guess that's it. That's all she wrote.
Is there something you'd like to say? Dinner's ready? Okay. We're wrapping it up right now.
Yeah.
Do you want to come in and do a segment?
No, okay. I'm on the stove.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. All right. We're wrapping it up right now.
Okay.
All right. Look at that dog is obsessed with her.
Yeah.
Fucking it's obsessed. So wait, what were you saying real quick?
Oh, just that, you know, I was kind of, it came up that, you know, I was touring with Drew, or I'm not touring, but I mean, I'm doing a bunch of dates with him. I'm still doing my stuff. BrendanWalsh.com has my tour dates on him. Get them while they're hot, because I don't fucking update that motherfucker. And it's amazing how it's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be in somewhere tomorrow. I should probably put that on my site.
Oh, I tweeted a bunch of tour dates today for, like, when we wrap. Trip Flip, I'm hitting the road.
Yeah.
And I tweeted them up there, and they're like, how come none of these are on your website? And I was like, oh, shit. I forgot.
You got to get a guy or something. I don't know.
Fucking, I would love an assistant. Mark Maron has an assistant. And he's doing the podcast in a couple of weeks, and I'm dying to ask him how much his assistant costs.
You know what? I think I'm going to look into this once. If I sell this this new show idea, I think I'm going to get an assistant, and I'll just go to the colleges, figure out how you can get college credit. Like, just have someone hang out with me and be like, look, I'm going to sit around, smoke cigarettes, and make believe I'm writing a script. You fucking take my dry cleaning.
I just want someone to go, Bert, I have these emails that are important we need to reply to.
Yeah.
What is your answer?
Yeah.
And just go, oh, yeah, tell them that's cool.
Yeah.
Because just for me to, like, thumb out, like, that sounds great. Can we do, you know, like, it takes too much. It doesn't take too much out of me, but it's just like, that's not my real wheelhouse of creativity. Yeah. It's not where my comfort zone lies. I'm just like,
no, we don't want to do that shit. Bills and insurance and stuff. Like,
this podcast today, I fucking went through. I was like, it started with you.
Because
I was like, I want to have Brendan on, like, today. Because Brendan is someone I know that I can have a straight conversation with. I won't ever have to worry about editing, nothing.
Yeah,
like, I could just talk to him forever. I'll post that tonight because I'm a week behind on this. So I'm like, all right, great. And so I was like, Brendan. Then Mac Faulkner is from the Chive. You ever follow the Chive?
I don't know the
fucking
Chive.
Fucking great.
Yeah?
Oh, my God. But it's I fucking love it. It's an app that I just – it's a website too, but you can go to thechive.com.
Okay.
It's just pictures of chicks – they just look hot, funny pictures.
Oh, you know what? I got out of that.
Really?
Don't do that. Benson turned me on to Pretty Girls. I Like Girls Daily. Either way, there were a bunch of Twitter things you follow, and they just post pictures of hot naked girls.
And it's not, like, even naked. It's not even naked. It's just sexy.
Okay.
Sexy.
Even that shit. It's like, you know what? There's enough. I get enough of it.
It's good for me taking a shit. I get on my
face. Well, you're married and stuff.
I go, what's the Chive like? So then I hop on Max coming in Friday, Allison Rosen from Corolla's podcast.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Allison Rosen and I did her podcast. She's fucking one of the, like, most put together chicks I've ever hung out with. She's coming in, and then Marin, and then that's February. But just booking this podcast is like, I feel weird texting someone going, you know?
Yeah.
It's a reason that you're in a fucking good place with the Bone Zone. It's like, it's just the three of us. When we get together, we do
it. Well, and I think that's something to, you know, not pat ourselves on the back, but it's like, you know, all these comedy podcasts, it's like comedians sitting around talking about serious shit most of the time. It's like, we just want to fuck around. I don't know. I think hopefully it separates us. We don't get a ton of listeners, but, or actually, I don't even know how many listeners we get, but.
Oh, I'm fucking obsessed with that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
What do you do? I don't even know how to figure it out.
I don't know what other people get, but I've heard other people talk, and it's
you do well.
I do fine.
Yeah.
I do fine, but it's like, it's not like my.
You get sponsors?
It's the same. No, I don't do advertisers.
Yeah.
I don't do advertisers because I don't want to, like, I mean, first of all, I've been approached by people that I've been like, man, no thanks.
We see it. I don't want your wife to yell at you.
Fuck that.
Okay.
I'm the fucking king of my
castle.
Yeah,
we'll see next time. You just get him.
We're just
going to
go in there and talk about soccer practice.
Yeah.
Fucking, I'm the headliner.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll text you. We can keep texting each other under the table.
Oh, all right. We should wrap up. Brendan, man, thank you so much for coming out and doing this.
It's great to hang out. Like you said, we never see each other.
Is there anyone that you would like? Here's what I also like doing on this podcast is like, if I'm home for like a Saturday when people are home, is there anyone you'd want to do the podcast with that like, that come in and like, we'll just get a bunch of fucking whatever enjoyables that people need to have? Who do you get down with?
You know, Duncan Trussell.
Oh, perfect. Or... Perfect. Done.
Have you had Duncan on before?
Yeah, no, but I've done Duncan's a bunch. And I keep trying to line up Duncan, and I love having a bunch of people in here
because
then I don't have to do any work.
Yeah, me and Duncan, or me and Randy from the Bone Zone, and Johnny Pemberton.
Let's do a Bone Zone episode where we bring in the whole Bone Zone.
Okay.
And we'll do it here, and we'll do a, like, you guys run it, and I'll just be a part of it.
Okay.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to plug? Is that her texting me one more time?
Watch The Price is Right. On February 20th, for real. It's her.
Wrap it up, big boy.
Price is Right on...
They're starving children in Valley Village.
Price is Right on the 20th. BrendanWalsh.com. That's Brendan with an O, B-R-E-N-D-O-N, Walsh. Go to my tour dates. I'm in Nashville this weekend with Drew Carey. Next weekend, I'm at the Vancouver Festival. Following weekend, I think I'm in Florida. I just go look at my tour dates. So it's updated through like May.
More importantly, if you want to enjoy Twitter thoroughly.
At BrendanWalsh.com, B-R-E-N-D-O-N.
And just be one of the people to enjoy it.
Yeah, or just get some dumb asshole who you hate to get them to follow me, and I'll, you know, be tortured.
Send your somebody fucking who just enemies doesn't to get it. Post it on Facebook. Guys, this is the reason to join Twitter. All right, Brendan, thank you.
Thanks, Bert.
This episode was brought to you by The Machine.